Honourable members, welcome to the Portfolio Committee on Police. Welcome to the meeting. Also, welcome to the Acting Secretary and his team. And I trust it's going to be a productive meeting. The focus today is going to be on the report of the DNA Board, the annual report, of course, and also the last 6 months. The document was circulated. Maybe just to indicate to members our program also for the rest of the year, and just to give an indication of our planning for next year. Members, today we will deal with the DNA Board, but we will also make available this morning a document from the content advisor on the adjustment estimates. Members will remember that Honourable Bailey last week, good morning, welcome, raised the issue of the estimate, and we then wrote to IFED and SAPS. We received their responses on Friday evening, and the content advisor has now prepared a document. We will just make it available to members, and then we, if need be, we can deal with it next Wednesday. But I don't think there's major issues, but of course we will give members an opportunity to look at it then. Next week, Wednesday, members will remember that we received several petitions. Remember, earlier this year we looked at the petition from Honourable Bergman, but there's other petitions also from local communities, so we'll facilitate that process next Wednesday. And then in the last week, originally we were destined to meet only on the Wednesday, but due to the fact that we've got a few reports and also sets of minutes, we will meet in the last week on the Tuesday from 10 o'clock and then the Wednesday, the normal time. Then with regard to next year's program, just an indication to members, the application for the study tour is underway. If that is going ahead, it will be the last week of January and the first week of February, but we will communicate to members if there's any progress, and we will then next week, Wednesday, submit the draft program for the first term of next year, so until the end of March. So I just want to give an indication of members in terms of our planning to ensure, maybe just in terms of also of legislation, it seems that the only piece of legislation that will come to us in the first term will be the critical infrastructure currently, but we will also make a copy of that legislative program available next week to the committee, you know, in terms of our planning for next year. So that's where we are more or less. A welcome to Judge Mokoro and also the other members of the DNA Board. We're very glad to see them, and welcome also for the interaction this morning. I'm going to first give an opportunity for the content advisor to give a briefing. Then I'll ask the members to introduce themselves, and then I'll also ask Judge Mokoro just to introduce the delegation. Yes, Evan, you're welcome.
Thank you, Chin. Just by way of introduction, we've gone through this introduction before on the 2nd of March when the DNA Board presented. But I thought just to refresh our memories, the Criminal Law Forensic Procedures Amendment Act 37 of 2013 came into effect on the 31st of January 2015. In terms of Section 15B5, the Criminal Law Forensic Procedures Amendment Act 2013, the Minister of Police must appoint a National Forensics Oversight and Ethics Board, or we call it the DNA Forensics Board, and report to Parliament within 14 days of its appointment. The Minister of Police reported on the appointment of the Forensic Oversight Board on the 27th of February 2015. The functions of the board, as set out, there are many, many functions of this board chair, and they've got a big task. They are to monitor the implementation of this chapter of the Criminal Law Procedures Act. B, they must make proposals to the minister on, one, the improvement of practices regarding the overall operations of the National Forensic DNA Database, two, the ethical, legal, and social implications of the use of forensic DNA, and three, on the training and the development of criteria for the use of familial searches. Provide oversight over the process relating to, one, the collection, retention, storage, destruction and disposal of DNA samples, two, the retention and removal of forensic DNA profiles as provided for in the Act, 3, familial searches. 4, any breaches with respect of taking, transporting, analyzing, storing, use, and communication of DNA samples and forensic DNA profiles, including security breaches. And 5, security and quality management systems. There are more functions, and I will run through them. They must handle complaints by, one, receiving and assessing complaints about alleged violations relating to the abuse of DNA samples and forensic profiles. B, security breaches and reporting to complainants in respect thereof. 3, gathering such information which will assist the board in discharging its duties and carrying out its functions under the section. 3, attempting to resolve complaints by means of dispute resolution mechanisms such as mediation and conciliation. 4, referring complaints to relevant authorities where applicable. And 5, reporting to the minister the outcomes of every complaint. E is to consider all reports submitted to it in terms of the chapter, and F, consider any other matters related to the chapter. Further functions, it may gather such information which will assist it in discharging its duties and carrying out its functions under the chapter. 3, a copy of the report contemplated in section 15AC5 must be submitted to the National Commissioner to follow up and address the issues contained therein. 4, the National Commissioner must report to the Board within 90 days of receipt of the report contemplated in section 15AC on the steps taken to rectify issues contained therein. 5, the Board may establish committees to deal with specific matters as and when required. And 6, the Board must submit a report on the execution of its functions to any authority established by law regulating the protection of personal information. There's a procedure for handling complaints. The board may, either as a result of a complaint lodged with it or its own accord, consider a complaint. 2, the board may must refer a complaint contemplated in subsection 1 to the committee of the board for assessment in the prescribed manner. 3, the committee must offer its assessment of the complaint report to the board on the outcome of such assessment, including recommendations relating thereto. 4, in the case where the criminal act is alleged to have been committed by a person subject to an assessment, the board must refer the matter to relevant authorities for further action. And 5, the board must ensure that recommendations regarding disciplinary matters are referred to the National Commissioner, B, the Executive Director of IPED, or any other relevant authority. C, the relevant authority referred to subsections 4 and 5 must report the outcome of such further action to the board. Chair, that's a important provision in terms of discipline. And then the composition of the board. Again, section 15V2 provides for the minister to appoint a board of not more than 10 persons for a period of not more than 5 years on a part-time basis and drawn from the following areas. 5 persons outside the public sector with knowledge and experience in forensic science, human rights law or ethics relating to forensic science. 4 persons must be from the public sector on the level of at least the chief director and be made up of 1, the secretary of police or his or her representative, 2, representative of the Department of Health who has knowledge of in the field of DNA, 3, representative of the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development who has a sound knowledge of constitutional law, and 4, a representative of the Department of Correctional Services. And then the minister must appoint the chairperson of the board who is a retired judge or a senior advocate with knowledge and experience in the field of human rights, and a deputy chairperson from the remaining members of the board. Chair, there are reporting requirements. Section 15AC14 provides for the board to report on its functions to Parliament annually. If you remember, they've given us a progress report in March, was set up, I think it was the 2nd of March. Section 15CA2 provides for the minister to report not later than 5 years after the commencement of the Act to the National Assembly on whether any legislative amendments are required to improve the functioning of the National Forensics Database and the use of forensic DNA evidence in the combating of crime. And then section 15AC3 provides for, after the initial period, the minister must submit a report every 3 years to the National Assembly. There's a report that the National Commissioner must make. The National Commissioner must report as part of the annual report of the service to the National Assembly in terms of section 55D of the PFMA report in respect of the performance of the National Forensic DNA Database relating to the use of forensic DNA evidence in the investigation of crime and relating to disciplinary proceedings concerning forensic DNA matters. The Executive Director of the IPED must report as part of the IPED annual report to the National Assembly in terms of section 55D of the PFMA on the performance of functions of the director in terms of this chapter, including disciplinary proceedings concerning DNA matters. Chair, from that last meeting that we had in March, the key issues that I thought we must just flag, which we hope that the board can provide some progress reports to, is the issue of accommodation, staffing, operations. Those are big issues, where the board sits, where it operates, its budget, and whether in fact the budget has been used. A big issue was the CODIS software and the contracting. Then the forensic science laboratory's tender for DNA kits. Then the National Forensic DNA Database and the progress thereon. And then cooperation from the correctional services on the taking of samples. I suppose that would also go for SAPS chair. Some of the questions that the committee can consider is a report on the operational arrangements, the functioning and accommodation with the DNA board, how it's going. Two, the committee must receive a report on the budget of the DNA board and whether in fact it has been ring-fenced and it is being used, and whether, if you remember correctly, there was issues of stipends and members paying for their own travelling and transport. And then the DNA board must also provide a report on the cooperation with the Civilian Secretariat, SAPS, and the Ministry of Police. The committee must receive a report on the development of the DNA database. Where is that in terms of progress? And then the committee must probe if the provisions of the Act are being complied with by the DNA board themselves, SAPS, and IPED. And then the committee must question the DNA board in terms of any disciplinary recommendations made by the board to the SAPS. And the board must provide a status report on the CODIS tender.
Thank you very much, Erwin, for that executive summary. Members, any questions to the contract advisor? I think it's quite clear, but thank you very much. It's again a refresher on the important task that is part of the mandate of the board. Let's ask the honourable members to introduce themselves before I go to the judge.
Dumelang bagaetsho, leina la ka ke nna Angie Molebatsi, ke leloko la komiti e, ke a leboga.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Phindile Mola, a member of this portfolio committee. Thank you.
Ndo leboga mshimbidza mshumo, ndi matshelon kha vhathu vhoṱhe, dzina langa ndi Lebohang Mabitsha, ndi membara wa Hay Committee. Ndo leboga.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning. My name is Akele Mbele, member of the committee.
Goedemorgen, my naam is Pieter Groenewald en ek is ook 'n lid van die party. Wel, ek sien ek van die party, maar vir die komitee, ja.
Good morning, my name is Leonard from Matlakane, member of this committee.
Thank you very much, honorable members, for your introductions. Judge Mokoro, over to you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, honorable members of the board. Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Thank you so much for giving us the opportunity to interact with the portfolio committee this morning and to give a report of the last year, the financial year, of the activities of the DNA board. Firstly, allow me to apologize quite profusely for this meeting probably being held today. It was supposed to be held much earlier, but I was at the time overseas. Thank you so much for that indulgence. Yeah, thank you so much. And then the second apology I need to make is that a couple of our members will probably, because they're being held up by traffic, will probably sneak in later. I hope you will permit that to happen. Thank you so much. And then I need to let you know who the members are who are here. Can I kindly, through your permission, Chairperson, allow them to introduce themselves? My name is Yvonne Mokoro, and I chair the so-called DNA board. Thank you.
Judge.
Good
Morning, Chair. Good morning, members. My name is Vanessa Lynch, and I am the Deputy Chair of the Forensic Oversight Board. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Dr. Karen Eller. I'm one of the members of the board.
Acting Secretary.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Alvin Pumuzarapea, Acting Secretary for Police Service.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, members. I'm Dawn Bell, the Chief Director of Legislation from the Civilian Secretariat for Police Service.
Good morning, Chair and members. I'm Hendrik Roberts. I'm the Director of Finance at the Secretariat for Police.
Thank you very much. Judge, over to you.
But if I may, Mr. Chairman, members, we have Brigadier Smith here with us, who is a resource person, and we also have at some stage to answer questions through your permission. Thank you so much. Thank you very much, members. And this report, Chairman, members, will be submitted in two parts. We have the first part, which deals with the period 1st April 2015 to the 31st of March 2016. But as you know, and as already had been indicated, we had an earlier report. It was actually in May of this year, where the Deputy Chairperson, Vanessa Lynch, reported on the state of the DNA board at the time. So part of this, part one of this report will include that. And the second part will consist of a progress report. You know, it's not absolutely necessary, but we thought it would be expedient to give that perspective of the work of the DNA board, progress report for the period 1st April 2016 to the 15th of November 2016. Having said that, since the inception of this board in January 2015, although we spent most of our time setting up the board, as you can imagine, to set up a new institution, we spent a lot of time doing that. But we were sufficiently fortunate to have a board which is constituted almost 50% of public servants and 50% of civilians. I think that was a well thought out composition. And a lot of, if not most, of the members, the civilian members, were in their own right experts on forensics. And we were able to deal with setting up the board and at the same time engage in our role and functions to the extent that we can. And for that reason, there was progress made in that regard also, setting up the board and doing whatever we can to advance the role and functions of the board during that time. The board is, as already indicated, consists of 10 members. And as I said, 5 civilian and 5 from the public service. The members have introduced themselves. Vanessa Lynch, of course, is a civilian. And then we have the Civilian Secretary of Police, Mr. Alvin Rapia. And then we have Alida Khrovia, who's a public service, who's in the Public Service Department of Health. Tanjue Mutlonye is in the Department of Correctional Services. Oshara Supor is in the Department of Justice. And Karen Ellis is a civilian member. She has extensive expertise in forensics, and so is Vanessa Lynch, not only expertise, but she's passionate about forensics, and we are grateful to have her. And then we have Mr. Rams Ramashia, who's a human rights lawyer, and Professor Zodwa Dlamini, who is a civilian, and Manshing Munama, who will step in later, is also a lawyer and a civilian member. Now, I'll start with the meetings that we had of the board. Because as you can imagine, setting up the board, we had to meet quite frequently. And we have there a list of the number of meetings that we had and what issues were addressed under one meetings of the board. But then, the way we operate and decided to operate is also to have subcommittees of the board, which had the role and function of dealing with specific aspects of our work. And as you can see, under two, we had what we call site meetings of the board between 1st April 2015 and 31st March 2016. The meetings of the broader board itself were held between the 1st of April 2015 to the 31st of March 2016. And I will shortly indicate how many in our governance, how many subcommittees we have and what they deal with. We had to create 8 subcommittees, and each subcommittee had at least 3 members. Out of the 10, 3 members. Now, if you take those 3 members, you would imagine that we had 3 subcommittees, and it's always a question how we deal with 8, how we constituted 8 subcommittees with 10 members. That meant that some members had to straddle and be part of more than one committee at a time. And you can imagine it stretched the capacity of members. Not to forget that all the members of the board are part-time members. We don't have any of them who are full-time. So for that reason, I think it is worth mentioning that members had to stretch themselves to full capacity. The way we operated is, and operates, we still have the subcommittees. Subcommittees deal with the issues that they are tasked with, and they make recommendations. They report to the broader board, and they make recommendations. And then the person who heads each committee has a nodal contact person in the Forensic Science Services, who they liaise with. So we get fully informed by the Forensic Science Services, and whenever we need information, the leader of the committee, chairperson of the committee, liaises, and is able to advance the work of the committee, and the committee reports to the broader board. Now, the committees that we have, as indicated at the end of paragraph 3, is a systems, reports, and gaps analysis, which oversees sample collection and performance of the FSL, and the DNA data to minimum quality standards. Okay, and then we have the public relations committee, commuting and engaging with the public. That's the role that it plays. The training committee, which has to oversee subs to take in the training.
Sorry,
of...
just a moment. Please, Honorable Mulabatsi.
Do we have this presentation?
Yeah,
we submitted a report.
It was electronically, I think, made available as well as copies, Mr. Lobby.
Is this one?
Yeah, that's right. That's
okay, because I can't follow.
Oh, you can't follow.
No, we know just above paragraph 4.
Yeah. I don't...
Oh, okay.
I was not going to read it out as is.
But
you prefer me to read it out as is?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, No, your executive summary is fine, Judge. No, you can continue. That's great.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, members.
Thank you very much. Thanks for the consideration. And then we have the training committee, which oversees the training of SAPs to deal and manage DNA, taking buccal samples and in the investigative role. Then we have the assessment committee, overseeing compliance with ethical and privacy issues and dealing with complaints. And then we have the finance and the risk committee, which essentially operationalizes the DNA board and ensures that the board operates within budget. And the DNA secretariat will report to the finance and risk subcommittee, therefore, as soon as we have a DNA secretariat. As you might learn later, we still don't have that. And once we have a DNA secretariat, it will then perform its role and functions, assisting the board. Then we have the reports or task committee, which analyzes DNA, the DNA Act, and breaks down the reports that we should, according to the Act, either have or engage in, either we report or who reports to us, who and when, in terms of the Act. And then we have the Transitional Arrangements Committee, which has to give us an overview of transitional arrangements as provided for in the DNA Act. Now, we had a strategic planning exercise where we had to look at the Act, look at our role and function, and strategize how we're going to operate for the first 5 years or the duration of this board. And we identified the board's strategic objectives for the 2015-2016 year. And we identified those as to create a support infrastructure for the board and appoint a DNA secretariat. That was crucial, very critical, because the DNA secretariat had to assist the board to develop and implement the required policies and procedures to make the board as effective as possible. We had to create those subcommittees, board subcommittees, to work with the DNA secretariat and complete oversight reports as according to the subcommittee charters, because each subcommittee had to create charters of operation, what they have to deal with and how they have to report to the board. So each subcommittee has charters which have been approved by the broader board. We also had to identify the need to oversee the development of the standard operating procedures in conjunction with the National Police Commissioner, the NETCOM, to finalize the policy and oversee the identification and implementation of the software solution to support familial searching. We identify the need to oversee the implementation of the DNA database software in order to support comparative searches on the DNA database and manage the retention, deletion, and forensic DNA profiles from there. We identify the need to develop an outline of the board's statutory reporting requirements. And as you can see in the report, we have the key processes along the value chain to deliver the board's vision and mission. The objectives that we have achieved because as we went along our role and functions, we managed to achieve some of those objectives, but unfortunately we also had challenges to achieve each and every objective. And I will point out what those challenges are, and we can have a discussion around that. And as was earlier indicated, in May, when the deputy chairperson reported, she highlighted a number of those challenges. And I'm afraid, chairperson, members of the committee, most of those challenges have unfortunately not been overcome. But we will discuss those, and we will hear in response what the issues are. Important was, of course, the need to appoint a DNA secretariat. And that was identified as a key component to assist the board. But it was hampered by the board's effective oversight and function, leading to members of the board having to act in a full-time capacity to facilitate the board's decision-making process. Because we didn't have, we have up to now not yet appointed the board secretariat, although I must say we have structured the profile of the kind of person that we would like to appoint, and very soon we will advertise. But the long and short of it is that we don't yet have DNA secretariat. And it is for that reason that we say, as a result, besides the fact that these 10 members would be members of the subcommittees which straddle the lines, those subcommittees actually operate as if they are almost full-time people. They, so to say, mostly do the work that the secretariat should have done. And Vanessa Lynch, who is the deputy chairperson, has been the lifeline of this committee. Unfortunately, we all have our full-time jobs, and it stretches us to our full capacity. Now, the subcommittees, because of the work that they have done, and because I think they are also dedicated, members are dedicated, they have been instrumental, certainly instrumental in advancing the work of the board, and almost serving as if they are the DNA secretariat, with Vanessa Lynch taking the lead. Now, the board has communicated with the National Police Commissioner in an effort to develop standard operating procedures. There were two letters that have been attached to the report. And if you look at those letters, you'll see the communication between the National Commissioner and the board with regard to those standard operating procedures. Now, until such time that we have the software solution introduced by the FSL, the ability to run familial searches on the national data, DNA database, the board is unable to finalize any policy to oversee familial searches on the data, the forensic database. But the board has been in discussion with the FSL to monitor the progress of the development of an appropriate database software solution. But then the board requires the assistance of a full-time DNA secretariat, so that It can assist to develop an outline of the board's statutory reporting requirements as well as ensure compliance therewith. So it is quite evident how critical the DNA Secretariat and staff as a whole would be to advance the work of the DNA board as fully as possible.
Judge, the reality is you can't be the governance structure.
Absolutely,
also the
operative.
Yeah, operative.
Yeah.
I mean, you must oversee.
We can't monitor ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, so you're actually doing it pro bono. Pro bono secretary.
We do a lot of things pro bono. Don't worry about that. Yeah. But thank you, Mr. Chairman, for that indulgence. But that is the point that really we must stress. Yeah, we must stress, and we must have that person as soon as possible. I will report, though, on the progress that has been done in that regard. Now, let's look at our challenges, our operational challenges. I don't have to repeat and continue to stress the need for the DNA Secretariat. Now, the budget, you mentioned that we had challenges around the budget. We still have challenges around the budget. Now, the Civilian Secretariat has allocated the board's 2015-2016 budget, as Vanessa Lynch reported in May last year. That budget was allocated to some urgent matters which arose at the time, which resulted in the fact that the board had no funding to facilitate its operation for the 2015-2016 year. I think we had used about more than 340,000, a little more than 340,000 rand, and the rest, almost a million rand, or 950,000 rand was used for urgent purposes of urgent issues which arose at the time. And as the deputy chairperson of the board reported in May, it created a lot of destabilization within the board because there were certain things that we couldn't do because we didn't have the money to do that. The balance of our budget was used for something else outside of the role and functions of the board, and we remained with a nil balance in our budget. So the budget requested for 2016-2015, as we'll show later, in our view, is also not sufficient to fulfill our strategic objectives. We have a budget which is much lower than what we had anticipated we would have. And comparing it with the operational functions in our strategic plan, the budget would certainly not meet the role and functions that we have to play according to our strategic plan. Another challenge which still remains, and it is also in the context of that seemingly pro bono work that we are expected to do when we should not, in terms of the Act. Members have not yet been remunerated for their out-of-pocket expenses, nor even for the time that they spend on the board. And that also in the context of the fact that some members consciously do not take a fee or do not take an allowance, have given it up willingly. But the few members who need to be remunerated have still not been remunerated, and we will hear what the issues are, because apparently it is just some small aspect of administration which precludes members from being remunerated for the work that they do, for the time that they spend, considering that these people also have their full-time jobs, and some of them are in private practice, And as we always make the point, it is unacceptable. As far as we are concerned, and we still do not have our own office space, our own facilities. We still do not have our own separate identity for the board, which, considering that the Act requires the board to be independent, precludes us from being perceived as independent, because our view is that not only should we be independent, we should also be perceived to be independent. And if the public sees us coming in and out of the civilian secretariat building, the impression might be created that we are subject to the subs. And we think that is unacceptable. Now, if you look at the schedule that is provided, it indicates our needs regarding office space, regarding our own logo, regarding our letterhead, website, our email address, and our postal address. All of this is required and indicated and worked out in order to advance the creation of an independent board. And unless we achieve that, we might be failing in terms of the Act. Now, the challenges reported in respect of the implementation of the provisions of the DNA Act. SAPS, as is indicated there, has collected about 126 reference samples. From sentenced offenders, or the sentenced offender population of about 162. So out of 162.423 offenders, 126 reference samples have been collected, of which 117,000 are sentenced and 45,000 plus are remand detainees. And those are the statistics as at 23 February 2016. And that is a huge challenge, which I think Brigadier Smith will inform us fully later. Now, when we look at the strategic objectives of 2016-2017 and the objectives of the board, we have to appoint the DNA Secretariat, and that is underway, as I indicated. We will continue to operate within the 8 subcommittees. The sentence offender sampling program will be prioritized. The National Forensic Data DNA Database software to support the comparative searches on the national database must be implemented to ensure that the retention framework as envisaged in the DNA Act is supported. The policy to support familial searching must be finalized, and the software to support it, the searches must be identified and implemented according to the Act. And again, the board requires the assistance of a full-time DNA secretariat. The board must continue to oversee the development of the standing operating procedures in conjunction with the NETCOM. We must also ensure compliance with the provisions of the Act generally. And in the meantime, a draft statutory reporting framework has been developed. And then this, under paragraph 8, is the budget for 2015, which, as I said earlier, as I reported earlier, we had only used 342,179 when the rest of it was spent for other urgent issues determined by the civilian secretariat or by the department, and that money was used in that regard. Now, it is needless to say, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, that the idea of having a DNA board is, like the rest of the world, to ensure that forensic DNA databases become integral to a criminal justice system. The purpose of the National Forensic DNA Database is to load as many known forensic DNA profiles onto the system. And those will be compared with the profiles for criminal intelligence purposes against the forensic DNA profiles collected from crime scenes. And DNA is not only necessary for crime investigation, it is also used for unidentified human remains, for missing persons. And in those countries which have successfully introduced DNA legislation to effectively populate their national DNA databases, there has been an increased responsibility to monitor the administration, which are responsible for the DNA databases. And it is in that context that the role of the DNA board needs to be appreciated. And in the board's first 2 years of operation, as you can see, we have not been without challenges. We have tried as much as we can to set up the board. We have had our challenges, but as I said earlier, we've managed to operate to the extent that we can. And I think if and once we have appointed our secretariat, our DNA board secretariat, and once our budget is properly appropriated or properly allocated, we'll be able to do a lot more than we have, considering the challenges. But despite these challenges, as I say, we have managed to convene a number of meetings, and those meetings were necessary to set up the board, to create structures and to create procedures, including the subcommittee charters in terms of which we operate. And we have managed to respond to some queries. We have also had our website established much later than anticipated. So the communication that we have had with the public in general through our website has not been what it should or could have been within the, let's say, more than a year of our operation. But once we have set ourselves up completely, our budgetary requirements are respected and operationalized, and the DNA Secretariat is appointed, we hope to achieve much more. But we can discuss that and look at our shortcomings in that context. And we would urge the committee to look at our shortcomings in context of our challenges. Part two is the progress report. Part two is a progress report, which, as I said earlier, need not be reported on, but we would like to point out, because it shows how we intend to address the challenges. Yeah, but if I may, through you, Chairperson, pause at this stage, so that we can deal with questions that clarify part one and brings to the fore issues which may not have been properly addressed in what I've said. Questions from the members of the committee, the honourable members.
No, thank you, Judge. Thank you for the presentation. We welcome it. I think it's also good that we have the 6 months report, because it gives us a view of what's still outstanding. So let's go then to questions and the matters that members want to raise. Let's go to Honourable Bailey first, and then we'll go that side. Yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Judge, for the presentation, as well as the whole team that has been working and put it together. I think just a general comment before I launch into my one or two questions. My first, Chair, is a niggling concern, which comes from previous presentations, that it seems the civilian secretariat and the bodies that reside within or under it are still being treated as the poor stepchild of the police portfolio. I'd expressed concern in previous committee meetings about the seemingly haphazard and ad hoc way in which the funds of the secretariats get diverted and in that way sort of derail the business plan. And to my understanding, we're a big contributor to the negative findings from the AG for the departments. So I'm cognizant that seems to be a key challenge and is reflecting in the reports we're receiving from the DNA board. And in that regard, just my first question, we don't seem to have the copies of the correspondence to the NATCOM attached to this presentation that the judge referred to. So I may be speaking or asking a question that would have been answered by that. But I just wanted to get a sense from the judge and her team. Firstly, in terms of Section 15A of the SAPS Act, which also relates to the operation of the board, that speaks about the obligations in terms of, let me just find it quickly so I'm not getting myself confused here. If I remember, that has to do with the national sex register, sex offender register, because that outlines some responsibilities on the part of the national commissioner. Let me see, 15A subsection 2. Yeah, so that's fingerprints, images being included in the national register for sex offenders. Now, I'm aware this is an issue that had come up previously in the social development portfolio a couple of years back, where there were big shortcomings and deficiencies in getting those basic systems set up. Has the board been able to conduct any oversights and gain some insights into that particular environment, and what are the challenges there? And then if I can just go to then section 15T, which has to do with, I'm scrolling up and down here. 15T is then to do with awareness and training programs. Now, I fully appreciate the scope and the complexity and the technical nature of much of what the board is having to cover. But in terms of the basics, I would like to think that the first foundational steps are at least happening in a strategic way. Now, 15T mentions ensuring guidelines relating to awareness programs, liaising with the NATCOM and the ED of the IPID. So obviously that has to be done in a sort of phased, gradual way, because there's a lot of the police service to cover and you can't do everything at once. I would imagine that the FCS environment, the FCS units, would be an identified key priority around training, so that the investigators working in terms of sexual offences and child violence, etc., domestic violence, are the first in line to benefit from the training that would be coordinated around forensic issues. Has that been the case? How far have we got with that? Do I have a correct understanding that would be the environment to start with? If I'm wrong, I'm quite happy to be enlightened. But that is what came up to me, came to mind for me, is the need to bolster the performance in addressing violence and sexual offences against women and children in relation to the DNA database and so on. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I don't know where I should sit that I can also start. Normally I'm at the last one to ask questions, but thank you.
No, we're giving now a special seat to party leaders on the
day. Oh, okay, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you. Chairperson, no, firstly, I don't think we can actually ask certain questions to the DNA board. I mean, the report is quite clear. I think we should ask some questions to some other parts, and I want to ask the Secretariat. For instance, if you look at the budget, why do we have this situation? And they must answer to that. Because, I mean, the board cannot, for instance, the Secretariat, they cannot implement it because of the lack of funds. It's as simple as that. And what is quite disturbing, Chairperson, is that if you look at the samples taken, it is quite clear, because it says here that it has collected 126 reference samples from the sentence offender population of 162,000 plus. That gives 0.08%. I mean, we started with this act, I think, in 2011 already, and it was quite a process. Was it even earlier, later? Say where? Yeah, well, it was passed, but I mean, it started here with the process in the committee. It was a long process to get it through the committee in Parliament and all that sort of things. I mean, the importance of it don't need further emphasis. So my question is not towards the board. My question is to the Civilian Secretariat, why do we have this situation that we have a board? It is according to the Act, but they cannot function because of a lack of funds.
Thank you, Chairperson, and apologies for coming late. I think I concur with Honorable Groenewald. I think the board came to us somewhere in March or last year, I can't remember. And the very same thing that they presented to us at that time are still the same things that they present today. So I think the basic question would be what Honorable Groenewald asked. Thank you.
Honorable Mavunga at the back. Are you fine? Thank you. Honorable Ramatakwani, you're welcome to go ahead.
Well, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. And thanks to the judge presentation. Just I think the question I'm going to ask is also have something to do with Secretariat. But first I want to ask the judge, in terms of your strategic planning and laying out the program going forward, that in that process, obviously, once we have a strategic plan, you sort of clarify the scope of what you need to do. and that scope of what you need to do, also somehow start checking about the funding that you're going to need, certain, you start developing your own wish list on the number of things that you need to do. I just want to find out if the board has been able to do that kind of work and make a submission to the secretariat on it. And so what, if you have done so, what has been the response based on the work to be done from the secretariat on it? I would then, obviously, the next question that stretches out to the secretariat, what have they done with respect to that? Now, Judge, you said something about you only spent 340,000 subject for correction, and then about 900,000, close to a million, was used by the secretariats for other urgent matters. Now, the urgent matters were not necessarily defined what the urgent matters was. If the budget was meant to be the budget for the board, why would then midstream secretariat find another urgent matters to utilize the budget which was already earmarked or ring-fenced or set aside for the functioning of the board? Because that takes me to the question of the non-payment of out-of-pocket expense. Where does that backstop? Secretariat? That because of this diversion of taking the money and using it for something else. I suspect that because of the utilization of the 950,000, so there was no money then left to pay for out-of-pocket expense, and of course the board fees. You did mention about the board fees. So what's the situation there, and if Secretariat can please help us, which board may meet and do all the kinds of things they do without necessarily being paid the out-of-pocket expense or even the board fees, because these are all predetermined, that what the fee is going to be. This is a kind of the secretariat response as well as the board, I think, on that particular question. It may be useful because if that kind of issues are not resolved, it may take us to a problem of failure to adhere and failure to adhere to the Act. And if there's failure to adhere to the Act, what are the associated or consequential implication for that? Because there will be consequential for that. I think maybe you can help us to understand that. The separation, I agree that there must be seen to be independent and perceived to be by your location and proximity and non-proximity to the police, so that you are able to do your work without necessarily being seen to be influenced. Now, on that, has there been any, in your view, the judge as well as secretariat, has been any development towards that? Can you say there is a development towards moving into a building somewhere in Centurion, which is not the same as the one that is? Has that been done? Has the work been simply been proposed to, or study done, or organizational development study done, to say this is where we're going to go and this is going to be the cost for it? And that's then that gives you indication of the budget. So that's really the question I'm asking for now, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable Mullah, thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson.
All my questions are asked. I will ask you about the full-time DNA secretariat. I think it was March when we were here. You were complaining about the full-time secretariat. And I asked the question, how are you operating without the full-time secretariat? And now it's November. You came with the same thing. I don't know what was the reason for you not to appoint the full-time DNA secretariat. About the meetings, when are your meetings sitting? Is it monthly or quarterly? And who sits in those meetings apart from the members of the board? 5.74, office space and facilities. No funds available to the board for this financial year. Was this budgeted for or not? For awareness program, when was the last awareness program conducted for police officials, convicted offenders, and the public? Thank you, Chief Justice.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mula. Honorable Bachi.
Thank you, Chair. My first question, tell us about the CODIS tender. CODIS tender. My second one, do you have any disciplinary recommendations you made to SAPS? My next one is the SAPS members that you train on buccal swabs taking. What are the requirements? And you spoke, my next question, you spoke of some hiccups in familial searches. How were they done in the meantime whilst you're still experiencing your teething problems? How were they done, the familial searches? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Just two questions from my side. The first to the board and the second to the secretariat. Judge, I just want to know, at the end of the day, the board is appointed by the Minister of Police. If the situation prevailed now for the last 2-3 years, shouldn't the board, maybe, for example, directly ask for engagement with the Minister of Police and say, listen, Minister, you have appointed us. We've got a mandate. We must be independent. But this is the status quo. I just want to get indication, was there any efforts, was there any meeting, is there annual meeting with the executive authority, just to get a sense on that. And then my question to the Secretariat of Police, I just want to get a view, because I've looked at your structure in the annual report as well, and I think it's maybe an issue also with reference to the inspecting judge, because I get the sense your line function people acting secretary are dealing with these boards at all. There must be somebody in your institution that is specifically tasked to say, you must ensure you are deputy director or your senior that's responsible for the liaison with, for instance, this board, ensuring that the issues are dealt with, the budget issues, the governance issues, the accommodations issues. Because I'm concerned, if I look at the issues that was raised by Vice Chairperson Lynch earlier this year and where we are now, even in terms of the progress report, a lot of these issues could have been sorted out. It's not big issues. You know, a private box here and that, and a website. It's not, I mean, I will contract a private, private sector institution and I will get it done in a week. Start up and it's done. We're sitting with those issues still. So my concern is, and maybe you're from your comments on it. It's quite clear the Secretariat is responsible for certain institutions. Okay, the Firearms Appeal Board is now away, but I get the sense there's a gap in the Secretariat, that there's a lot of people working in the same institutions, but there's not one dedicated person who must deal on a day-to-day basis with the challenges of these institutions. I just want to know, do you agree? If you not agree, what is the current model? because it's clearly not working. Right, thank you. Let's go first to the judge and then to the acting secretary.
Thank you so much, honorable members, for those questions. Chairperson, through you. I think we will ask the different members to answer the question. If we have to start with Honorable Mbele's question, but thank you for sharing the concern with us, honorable member, regarding the operationalizing of the DNA board and the challenges that we experience in that regard. The sex offender registration, which is required in terms of 15A, as you say, of the SUPS Act, but it's also an issue with regard to the board, the oversight function of the board. Your question regarding the awareness, the first foundational steps, and the training of SUPS members to take buccal samples and perhaps to invest with regard to the investigative functions, the way DNA is managed. So those would be the issues in your question. Let me answer the awareness question. Indeed, it is very important that awareness regarding, number one, the need for training. That's very important. Training is required with regard to taking samples. Training is required with regard to the use of DNA in the investigative functions of members of SUPS. And because the Act requires that only those who have been trained would take buccal samples, it is important, therefore, to train people to do that. We have had to answer questions with regard to nurses taking DNA samples when buccal samples when they have not been trained. So it is important, it's an important aspect, and we need to be aware of that, and SUPS has to be aware of that, and for that reason, training is very important. But I will also tell you why training generally in investigation and the management of DNA samples is important. Only yesterday, I met young lawyer, criminal lawyer, who told me that he had, in his about 10-year experience as a criminal lawyer, never had to worry. He's a criminal lawyer specialist. He never had to worry about the factual context of his cases and the legal arguments. The first thing that he always questioned was whether the DNA management in the particular case has been properly managed and therefore whether the evidence is reliable. And he tells me that in 90% of his cases, and he does that with a guilty conscience, in 90% of his cases, he succeeded in getting the accused persons acquitted because of the mismanagement of DNA evidence. In those cases where DNA evidence was critical to the case. And it is for that reason that it is very important that we create this awareness within SAPS of the importance of training, not only in collecting DNA buccal samples, but also in our investigative work. But I think Brigadier Smith will respond more fully to that question. And with regard to your question with sex offender registration, I think the deputy chairperson will be in a position to answer that. With regard to copies of the correspondence, we thought we had submitted copies, those two letters. Yeah, we did, sir.
Can I just check, please, if the secretariat can just double check that for the members. I'm not sure if the other members have them in their packs. It's not attached to mine.
Yeah, we sent it electronically. So I think somebody needs to reproduce them.
Yeah, no, we will organize that we get it as soon as possible. Is the lobby coming?
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
And then, yes. And then with regard to Honorable Groenewald's question, oh no, your question is directed to the Secretariat. Yeah, okay. Yeah, okay, thank you. And Honorable Marke, yours is also related to Mr. Groenewald. And Honorable Matlakane. Ramatlakane, sorry for that. Ramatlakane, thank you very much. That's also directed to the Secretariat. But with regard to the fund, the budgetary process, I think it is important for us to know that very early on, we thought we cannot even begin to operate without strategizing. And we had gone away with all members there, members of the board, the secretariat, the civilian secretariat there, and we had a strategic planning session. Because we were made aware that without a threat plan, we cannot budget appropriately. Because our budget had to arise from our needs, our role, our function, and what we need in terms of our strike plan. So we did the exercise. We submitted the strike plan to the Secretariat. And needless to say, we were disappointed with the allocation of the budget. Another point that I need to make, and the Secretariat might also give information in that regard, is that when the budget for the board is planned, there is no consultation with the board. There's no input, in other words, required from the board. We get an amount allocated to us by the Secretariat. And because it is not ring-fenced, it is the reason that the Secretariat is able to make inroads into the budget. Chairperson, your question was whether we have tried to discuss these issues with the Minister. I think I managed to get an appointment with the minister once or twice through Ms. Bell. And on both occasions, I could not meet the minister. The appointment was postponed indefinitely in both cases. I would still really like to meet with the minister, and I am still going to make efforts to meet the minister. In the context of particularly our budget and all the other challenges that we make, I think it is necessary to create awareness not only with the secretariat, but also with the ministry on the importance of the sport. We just heard that there's a civil society organization which is underway. And let me not say it is because of that that the board becomes important. It is important anyway. But I think more and more questions are going to arise once there is public awareness. And when I say public awareness, I include civil society awareness, where civil society has the necessary expertise in this regard. So more and more questions are going to arise. And we will therefore have to answer more and more to the public. Once our website is really up and running and we have full communication with the public, questions have arisen already. We have tried to answer just a couple of questions from a couple of public members. But as soon as SUPS creates awareness among the public about the role of the DNA board and their functions, we're going to have to answer a lot of questions to the public in general. And those are the issues with regard to the budget. You want to know, Mr. Ramatakana, what, how we define or what the issues were with the urgent matter where our almost a million rand was used. I think the secretariat is here to answer, but when we questioned that, you remember there was a time when the police were quite challenged with regard to the public responses to the xenophobic attacks. There was a time last year, it is last year, right? Yeah, when these xenophobic attacks sprung up in the country. And our money was used in order to empower the police to function effectively in their responses to those xenophobic attacks. How exactly that happened, I think the secretariat is here. They will answer it. So those were the more urgent matters that the money was used for from our budget. And then, Honorable Muller, why not? Why have we not yet appointed the DNA secretariat? And who sits in our meetings? When we meet as a board, the civilian secretariat is part of that meeting. We have a representation of the civilian secretariat in the meeting. Because so far, they are our secretariat. We have now appointed a secretary who takes the minutes of our meetings. In the past, they used to do it. But there is connection, there is information, there is discussion, there is questions for accountability from the secretariat. And as I indicated to the member on our board, the secretariat member on our board, the other difficulty that we have is that there are times where not the same people from the secretariat come to the meeting. In one meeting, the secretariat member of the board would be represented by one person or another, and every time we have to regurgitate our concerns. But the prohibiting factors in this whole scenario is, I think, only minor, what I consider as minor administrative issues. And I still cannot quite understand in my own mind how small administrative functions can preclude the advancement of such important aspects of the board. And the secretariat is here. Maybe they can inform us fully. And what other? The code is tender. Honorable member, I think the honorable member Mulebas, yes. I think the secretariat can answer that. Or current, the member of the subcommittee, which deals with that. She can answer that. And the substraining regarding the buccal samples, what is required, the deputy chairperson will answer that, including the how the familial sample collection is done. She will answer that.
Thank you. I'll go through some of the questions that the judges asked me to refer to. So the first one was regarding the sex offender register. We have a subcommittee that is headed by Dr. Ehlers on my left, and that is done in conjunction with the Forensic Science Services. And part of that is a reporting on a gaps analysis. This information will also probably emanate from the Department of Correctional Services. We are currently experiencing some challenges with regards to the capturing of this kind of information, not personally as the board, but obviously we oversee this. One thing that will become clear in part two is that the challenges are being identified, the shortfalls in respect of the departments that are responsible for these challenges are being candidly reported upon, and it's a very transparent process. So currently we don't have information in respect of that particular aspect, sex offenders register, but it is on the agenda, and perhaps Brigadier Smith can give some further insight into that today. And you'll see in part two that the capturing system between the different departments seems to be an issue. So the Oversight Board has to be the conduit between the Correctional Services as well as SAPS in ensuring that the two communicate. And a lot of these systems are held in different departments in different ways. And in order for them to ensure that they actually collaborate and that they make sense and that we're able to ensure that what they are reporting is in fact collaborating with what another department is reporting is part of our functionality. So we don't have specific answers with regards to the sex offender register today, but by the next time we report, that will certainly be something on the agenda. And then you'll see in part two that in terms of the sex offenders register, that will fall under sentenced offenders being released, et cetera, in terms of capturing that information. So I hope that answers your question with regards to that. I just also wanted to mention with awareness and training, The board's responsibility, again, is not to provide training, it's to oversee it. And Ms. Grove is part of the subcommittee that looks at training specifically with SAPS, and that is in respect of buccal swamp sampling. The SCS is also handled by Health, not SAPS. So So perhaps Ms. Grove can also refer to that. That's not something that's part of our oversight, although it's very important, but the training of the FCS is handled by health. The training of SAPS with regards to buccal sampling is handled by SAPS, and we have a specific oversight in terms of the Act to ensure that training is taking place. And you'll see in part two, the systems report and gaps analysis shows how many police officers have been trained in this regard. And perhaps Brigadier Smith can also, after part two, indicate the status of the new tender. So there was a tender with regards to who was conducting the training. It's a two-day training course for SAPS. And they've just put out a new tender with regards to a new contractor with regards to that. Our duty in terms of awareness is also awareness around what the oversight board does, as well as to ensure that there is awareness, for instance, around correctional services, convicted offenders, understanding why their samples are being taken, and also, as the judge correctly pointed out, around the issues of what the database, what its functionality is, and the management of that specifically. But we don't have a mandate ourselves to actually conduct any awareness training, if that makes sense. It's all oversight. The other question that the judge has asked me to...
Sorry, Ms. Lynch, sorry.
Was that clear?
Yeah, no, there's just a follow-up from Ms.
Mubola.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. My question was specifically on the other specific requirements for the trainees that do the buccal swab taking from
sample.
Is there a particular requirement?
Yes, there is. In fact, the subcommittee of training went to the initial meeting last year where the contractor who had put together the two-day training course gave, it was literally over 2 days, a detailed account of what it is that the authorized police officer will be trained in respect of, what exactly will they receive training in respect of. And it's a very, very comprehensive two-day course where not only do they look at the provisions of the DNA Act around evidence handling, which, as the judge correctly pointed out, is a huge issue, but also how to take the DNA sample. And at the end of that two-day course, they have an assessment, and only if they pass that assessment and they are authorized, then they get an authorization number, and only those police officials who have passed that training course, passed the assessment, are then given a specific number, and they are the only authorized police officials who are able to take a buccal sample from certain categories of persons. And if you want any details of that, we also have Brigadier Smith who can give you specific details of that. But it was a very comprehensive training course, and they do have to pass those 2 days before they're entitled to take a buccal swab. And so far, we have not received a complaint in respect of any unauthorized police official taking a sample from any category of person that they're entitled to take a sample from in terms of the Act. Does that answer your question sufficiently? Okay, thank you. The next issue was regarding the code of tender. It's not actually a tender, and I'm going to ask my colleagues to look at that. It was the previous portfolio committee spoke about the consideration of utilizing a DNA database management software solution, and they referred to CODIS because it was available and because it was world-renowned. However, it doesn't specify in the Act that they have to use CODIS, which is the combined DNA database index system that is provided for by the FBI. The SAPs just had to show that they have a sufficient DNA database software management solution in place, and which they currently do have, to ensure that the indices that have been set up in terms of the Act are in fact accounted for, and that the expungement and the retention of those profiles on a database software solution are managed as envisaged by the provisions of the Act. And as part of the systems, the subcommittee that does systems and gaps analysis reporting, that is in constant discussion and often in very heated discussion. and they provide information which you'll see in your part two of your report, which illustrates that they do have a sufficient database software solution in place. Not to say that in future they may not still consider CODIS as an alternative. This is linked to the familial searches. Familial searches haven't yet been programmed into this, so therefore they are not being done. In saying that, there hasn't been a request for a familial search. Remember, it's only done in very limited circumstances, only in respect of unidentified human remains and missing persons, and only the crime scene index and the unidentified human remains and missing persons index may be searched. But that isn't being done because we haven't received a report from SAPS showing that that particular functionality has not yet been developed in terms of the database software solution. So a policy can only be developed once they have confirmed to us that a software solution in respect of familial searching has in fact been programmed and will be ready to be run on the database. So until such time, familial searches, even though limited in terms of the Act, will not be done.
Yes. Deputy Chair of the Board.
Yes.
Civilian misleads.
I'm sorry. Is familial searches not included in CODIS?
It is a functionality that is not... No familial searching is included in any database software solution. It is always separate to it because the parameters that are required for familial searching are very different to comparative searching. So a comparative search is run against all the indices, whereas familial searching, you are looking for similar profiles to show a familial relationship. So it's a different type of comparative search. So even if CODIS was implemented, SAPS would still have to contract with the FBI to develop a familial searching program to run separately, because it's not a comparative search, in accordance with the parameters acceptable in South Africa and in accordance with the provisions of the Act. So it's not an off-the-shelf product, so to speak. It has to be developed specifically with those parameters. And that's why even if SAPS did contract with the FBI and include CODIS as their software solution to the database, they would have to develop the familial searching policy separately. It's not something that any country simply can procure because of the specific limitations that are required. And perhaps if there's more questions around it, Brigadier Smith can assist me with that specifically. And the was there another question that you would like me to address? If I may, at this point, ask my colleague to speak about those issues that I've asked, and then perhaps after that, the training, if there are any other issues, Ms. Grove can attend to. Thank you.
Okay, I think Vanessa Lynch probably said everything about the database that needs to be said. Mm-hmm. Just we are in contact with the FSL as well and with the National Forensic Database people, making recommendations for our report issues as well to make sure that the timeline from when the samples were received are given done within the time frame. We are still busy going through all the data that we've received, so we haven't reported back on the timeline situation to make sure that all samples are analyzed within 30 days. But we did make some recommendations of dates being put into the system as well to accommodate us to make sure that they are following the timeline as set by the Act. And then, Brigadier Smith, I think he can continue with all the detailed information on that.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I think the first thing I want to maybe just also expand on the training, because it's very, very critical. And we're also very transparent with the training, that the training is at acceptable quality. And that's why when periodically, part of the oversight, we invited the board to come and assess and to make sure that it also meets their requirement. But the generic things that the training program needs to comply with is the learner needs to have a good understanding of the Act and the supporting regulations, needs to understand any health and safety issues. We're working with a biological sample, how to deal with that, how to properly approach a person, how to take that sample in a non-aggressive manner and not invasive. Also, the chain of custody, I think, is the most critical, as the judge had said. You'll normally find with forensic evidence that the scientific issues are normally left in high-profile cases, but your the point where there's weaknesses in the chain of custody. And we put a lot of emphasis on the chain of custody, completing of the documentation. If documentation is not complete, you do not have supporting information to make sure that the person from whom the sample understands why the sample is taken. The act is very, very specific that the person needs to understand what the sample, what will happen, what is the rights of the individual, and the whole packaging of this. We also explain to them generically what means DNA evidence. It's not required to be, but we use the opportunity that they understand what a DNA report is, what is the outcome report that you will get from doing a comparative search on the database, what must you do with, because for us it's very, very important not just to have the database and to get an outcome, but what happens, what's the follow-up that we expect. We're giving you a forensic investigative lead. We're giving you information that's indicating that a suspect is linked to more than one case. What does this mean? What do you need to do with that? Understanding our report. We put a lot of emphasis on that. Maybe getting back to the familial searches. The familial searches, I think it was well captured by the deputy chair, Ms. Lynch. The software is very, very specialized. It's different to what your normal comparative searches does. What you also need to do is, there is to put it plainly, there's scientific algorithms that need to run, because you get a list of possible matches. It's not 100% match. And what you need to do now is quantify what is the value of that, because the last thing that you want to do is get a list of 15, 20 possible, and indiscriminately you're going to approach people. You can't just do that. You need to have confidence and limit that list to a very, very small number, to 2 or 3. And that is also, if you do not have software, a very labor-intensive configuration that you need to do. Once you've got that, then there is a specific way what you must do with that information. So from the lab side is the software, but you'll also only have a few investigating officers that understand what this information means. It indicates possible relationship. It's not exact, like an exact comparison. You need to take that information, you need to do a further investigation to first qualify that, because you don't just want to take that information and approach a family member. You need to be very, very sensitive about this. There's a lot of ethical issues that are concerned. So you need to take this information and you need to do a lot of additional investigation to validate that. So familial searches is a topic which we would like to do, but we also want to do it in the correct way. We don't just want to jump and do it into this. Familial searches is a new field in forensics and science. It's not something that is done in all countries, but where it's done circumspectively. You must do it, have a right approach on that. It's correct to say that the Act does not prescribe what the software solution is. We've got a software solution, but our software solution does not only speak to the requirements that the Act is talking to about, having a database with different indices and to do the comparative search. What we want is also to interface our software solution with the other legacy systems where we receive information. You know, the CRIM system, the system that carries the criminal record. If a person is acquitted or the case is withdrawn, we would like to get that information automatically, not get it 2, 3, 4 days later. Currently, we're doing a weekly run on that. We would like that interface that happens real time, that is accurate. Because as soon as you take information from a secondary, there's always opportunity of mistakes, and we don't want that. We really want to be seen that we're complying with the Act and that we actively expunge at the right time when it's required. The compliance of having the profiles on the database, the retention periods, there we comply with. There is the software has been configured. For example, the Act says for a minor on the arrested index, it may not be, the profile not be longer than a year, or for for other arrested persons, we have not received any information from the court, we're not allowed to keep it longer than 3 years. So those are automatic expungements that do happen. The integrity of the data is very, very critical, because whatever remains on the database, the outcome is a comparative search. The outcome of the comparative search is a forensic DNA investigative feature, which you're going to inform an investigating officer that a suspect that's on the database or different cases are linked. You want confidence. So we need to make sure that that is correct information. So we're very serious about that aspect.
Brigadier, just a moment. I've got a follow-up on information
security. Yeah. Thank you very much, Brigadier. In what you were just saying, what are the chances of contamination or tampering?
Thank you, Honourable. The first thing is the software is within the normal security guidelines and firewalls that CETA and SAPS have got. That it's in a protected boundary, if I want to put it now very simply, where they do run tests daily, actively, to make sure that there isn't penetration to any of the SAP system. It's the same rules that comply there. That's from one perspective. Then there is the physical separation of the database, which is on a particular server that only certain people have got access to. The members of the database are the only people that have access to the database. Nobody else in the police can get access. So you've got the normal security, the passwords, the biometric. Then you've got functional as well. Although we've got the database, certain individuals have got certain functional roles which are defined, which they can get access to. The actual database is on the CETA service, which is kept in an undisclosed site where they do the normal redundancy and backups on that, and to make sure that the normal security rules. The members of my database that do have access, we're in an access control environment, controlled by biometrics. We have the cameras, we can see anybody that gets into the building. All my members, I have also gone through a vetted process as one of the requirements of the Act before they can get access to any of the information. I can go into much more detail, but I don't think it's necessary at this level. And one could always get CETA to come and explain I don't understand all the software parts, but we've asked this question, and it was also one of the things that we had asked the site security agents also to look into and to confirm what CETA is saying and what SAPS is saying.
Yeah, I think members, I think the previous committee did the site oversight, but maybe we must also do that next year again. Maybe do a site visit, be it in Plattekloof or Pretoria, that we just, with the board, just to get a sense of, you know, of the process. I think that will be important. Is that the responses?
And then through you, Chair, members of the committee, I think there might be some questions that the Secretariat will have to answer.
Yes, that would be good.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable members, I first and foremost, I just want to indicate that I am also a member of this board, and I want the board to succeed. We don't treat the bodies which are in the Secretariat as stepchildren. There are processes and rules that needs to be followed in terms of budgeting. And I just want to clarify some things. The board was appointed in January 2015. End of the financial year, the budgeting cycle had passed, so there was no budget for the board in 2014-15. So whatever the amount that we put there was coming from the Secretariat, it was no motivation was given to Treasury in 2014-15 for that. Their first meeting was on the 15th of March, and when I joined the Secretariat in September, the process of the strategic planning process was still on. They had not finalize the strategic planning process, which means that we passed another planning cycle of government, because the budgets requests, they must happen before September, the July, June, July time. That's when you have to go through the MTEC process and you are asking budgets for the following year. So still what we did was from where the budget which was allocated for the secretariat, we made provision to say, okay, let's allocate this. Nothing was allocated from Treasury which says this will be for the DNA bond. As a member of the board, when I came in, I indicated, and as part of sharing of information with the colleagues, to say we need to have a proper strategy that when I go to National Treasury, I must be empowered to talk about the DNA board with a specific strategic objective and the plan that is there. What I was given also in preparation for this year's budget, it was more the minutes of the strategic planning meetings. And I even sent with my colleagues here, because I was not there in one of the meetings, the templates that National Treasury use to say, please, just use this. It is going to assist us in making sure that whatever we're submitting, it's in line with what is the requirement. So the strategic planning, it is very key that you don't just go to National Treasury and you don't have a proper plan to ask for money. The fact that the DNA board is an establishment of statute doesn't mean that you can't go through the same process. So that process has to be followed. But we utilized the information that we have been given to make submissions to request additional funds. That's why even this funding that is here, it's now double what they asked for. And remember, you go to Treasury, you say, for the DNA board, we will require, I think we were looking at what, about 3.5. We were not given what we asked for. And as I speak, I received a letter from National Treasury, which is cutting the compensation budget for the civilian secretariat in the empty EFP period by about 3.2 million. And when they do that, it means that whoever gets the funding from the secretariat will be affected by that. That's how the budgeting in government works. The only time that, because this money in the Treasury books is not allocated to a specific institution, because if it is allocated in the PESPA, there is what you call the Appropriation Act. The Appropriation Act has got schedules. If the money is set, it shouldn't be utilized for any other purpose except for that institution. It will be in the schedule. And if we want the DNA board funds to be there and the DPCI judge to be in the schedule, which must be done, it's not us, it's not the secretariat that put that in the schedule. It's National Treasury that puts that. And that Appropriation Act, the schedule, it's brought through to Parliament. So those are the issues within the administration that we have to make sure that we adhere to. the issue that Chair has raised, Honorable Chair, about focusing and making sure that it's an issue that we really will take into consideration, because we are realizing that it's overwhelming dealing with all these institutions and the bodies. But we will consider the proposal that you have given us. just the reference, the minister, I think if the the meeting didn't take place, maybe we should have just written to the minister and say, here are the challenges, and then we do it in a submission form, like we did when we were dealing with the issue of the finalization of the board members, where there was one member not finally appointed, and we did it in writing just to avoid, because sometimes meetings, when they don't happen, if you have written, at least you know it's on record. The strategic plan that we have, based on that, and I'm still saying, and the portfolio committee can ask for the board to submit their strategic plan, so that you have that, because when we do a report, it should be based on the predetermined objectives, and the strategic plan should be tabled also here. It helps the secretariat to, it makes our life easy. So we are really would like to support, and as a member of this board, I want this board to succeed. On the issue of the payment of the fees, the process is that when you appoint a board, before the board is appointed, you cannot go to the Minister of Finance and you say, I'm supposed to have a board, so this is how I'm going to remunerate that. You appoint the board and you say, I've appointed a board, now it's in place. Then our minister goes to the Minister of Finance and say, I would like to remunerate the board in this matter. So that process, it took longer. That's why the issues of the payment didn't happen. But we have since got the response from the Minister of Finance, and we have communicated with board members that they should submit their claims, those who qualified for the claims. And so far, I think, but I stand to be corrected, I was told that only two board members who qualify for the payment, they actually submitted, I don't know if they submitted, they submitted the forms. We have to submit those claims for us to pay. Regarding the travel of the board, regarding the catering of the board, we fund all those. And if there's any one of the board members that they use their car and they traveled, they must submit the claims, and the secretariat is going to pay for that. I just want to ask maybe if two of my colleagues here would like to add things.
Thank you, Secretary Kling. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members. I just want to address the issue of the secretariat. The minister has finally approved the posts before, and the HR people have been working on it. So far, the job evaluation has been conducted, and an advert has been drafted, which was sent to the judge and to the deputy chair. That has been, I'm not sure if it's been approved or not yet, but the process now going forward is that the advert will be placed by the 4th of December in newspapers, local newspapers, and one national one. And by the end of Feb, after all the processes have taken place, we're expecting that an appointment will be made once the offer is accepted. Thank you, Chair.
Members, we're going to take now a 10-minute break, tea break, 10 minutes. Then we'll come back for a second round and also the second or the six-month presentation. Then we'll come back. Honourable members and also our guests, 10 minutes. Thank you.
I see about iPad and
yes,
oh my goodness.
That's a big thing. I don't know.
It's unfortunate. I really like it as a
commissioner. Yeah. But say, we've seen the news.
Yeah?
We've seen the news now. iPad is charging Paslani.
Yeah?
iPad is charging Paslani.
What?
For not disclosing a house and so forth. Defeating the ends of justice.
Thank you.
are you?
I'm well, thank you.
My colleague said he had a very interesting interview with you about your history. Political, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Good, how are you? I saw you running the other day. Over Rondebosch Bridge. No, you weren't. It was last week, Wednesday. About 8 o'clock in the morning. Yeah, yeah. So you ran before work.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So your exams went well? Did you see the latest story in the newspaper? That is putting charges against the commissioner for not disclosing a house that he bought. Yesterday I saw it on News 24. But otherwise you're welcome? Yeah. Okay.
The race on Sunday again.
Is it? Do you make it into two oceans?
Yeah.
Oh. Yes, my brother. He didn't get in. Yeah. I told him, yeah. Okay, good.
Thank you.
Honourable members, 1 minute, then we start again. Thank you. Members, thank you very much. We're going to proceed. Maybe just indicate, meanwhile, the correspondence has been made available to the members, the judge referred to. I think Honourable Ramatakane, you were the last hand before we adjourn. You're welcome.
It was just a small follow-up. From the reply or responses, particularly the response from the secretariat about the budgeting process. With that, at least we are aware how the cycle of budget functions. We all know that cycle, when it has to start and when it ends. But I hear the secretary here, head of secretary, almost defending himself with the process. The fact of the matter is the board is established in terms of the act. It's a well-known thing that there will have to be a budget, and it's before you arrive today. It's all known that it has to function, has such number of members, and is going to have this function and that function. You are the one that's responsible in making sure that you made a budget wish list is presented to Treasury, not through the board. The board can participate in that because of the strategic plan and so on. Now, I'm not sure whether I'm correct if I understood you to be saying that the two-cycle budget cycle has been missed for a budget. Or is just the last year, this budget, this year, we are going to be able to have the budget? Doesn't very clear in that response. What are the facts? Now, I think the Secretary of Civilian Oversight has inherently a responsibility as a member of the board, but also as an executive director on the other side, to ensure that what has to happen with regard to the strategic plan, and I'm here referring to the minutes that it wasn't quite a strategic plan, that you are the old hand, you know what must be done. Based on what has been discussed, then that translated itself into a strategic plan that is costed, that requires X amount of money. What is their reassurance? Is an assurance that there is going to be budget going forward, that the strategic plan has since been finalized jointly in that process, And next financial year, we're not going to have the problem, the same problem that we're talking about. That's really, I just want to have absolute clarity around that aspect.
Thank you.
At the back, you're welcome.
Thanks, Che. Maybe mine will be new. I'm not sure. But it is in relation with the operation of the DNA offices or structure. Does it operate as a vine grape, or we have got the national office only? Because everything that goes to the head office should come from the structures on the ground. I just want to understand as to whether this information comes from the from the structures on the ground, or information comes from the head office escalate to the structures on the ground. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable Molobachi.
Thanks, Chair. My question is on your template there about the letterhead. You say you are using government logo on letterhead. Does this not compromise your independence? Thank you.
Mark and then Honorable Bailey, thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just on the question of the budget itself, my understanding would be in some way the budget of the DNA board must in some way be reinforced. And I understood from the Secretariat that that is to be done by Treasury. I just want to know, or then who is supposed to make the proposal to Treasury for the ring fence? And in some way, is it not possible for the Secretariat informally to ring fence within their budget, because the budget is within their own budget? But I would my question is, because I would like to understand what can we do ourselves as a committee here? Is it within our rights as a committee to put a motivation to Treasury that this must happen, or we are requesting, or must it be done by the Secretariat itself? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. And then Honorable Mabula.
Thanks, Chairperson. Just two follow-ups from my side, and thank you to the judge and the deputy chairperson for the other responses. The first question, in terms of what the colleagues have highlighted just now, maybe to play devil's advocate a little bit, Chair, I have some questions about the degree of the importance of this issue of independence, or rather how it's expressed. Because from what I can see, there actually isn't a statutory basis for example, the ring fencing of funding for the board. Now, that may be a shortcoming in the statutes, and that can form part of the report that must come after the first 5 years as to any improvements to the Act. But as things stand right now, there actually isn't a basis for that. And, you know, I think maybe to echo what the chairperson was saying earlier, the issue of logos for me is neither here nor there. I mean, the IPED also uses the government logo, but for their independence is established in other structural ways. So, Yeah, I mean, I think that's an issue for debates, but the key issue for me remains getting those basics of resourcing and the support systems in place for the board to carry out its function. And then my second question is, I think, possibly best answered by the Brigadier. It was mentioned by the Deputy Chairperson of the Board that one of the challenges, for example, is around what the tech geeks would call interoperability between databases. So can data be transferred seamlessly and not be compromised between different databases? Now, is the Brigadier able to maybe expand on whether that's a challenge rooted in the delays, the long-standing ongoing delays with the CJS, IJS revamp, which the committee has looked at a couple of times over the past about 2 years now, because we really need to get as quickly as possible to the point where data can flow between SAPs, justice, correctional services, back and forth, as aided by the technology that does exist to do that. But we just have all these hiccups happening. So is that a big factor in the challenges so far, or am I coming at this from the wrong angle? Is that a side issue entirely? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Is that the question? Oh, no, Mula, sorry.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is a follow-up question. I want to know what happened when appointing the board in January 2015, because I'm confused now. Was the full-time DNA secretariat appointed or what? If not, why was not appointed? Because this is a critical position.
Thank you very much. Yes, maybe if we can also maybe move after those responses, Chair, Judge, to maybe the second month report. And I just maybe want to ask the Secretary of Police. Now, in terms of, and it's also mentioned in the 6 monthly report, that the Secretary of Police must ensure that guidelines related to awareness programs are developed and implemented, monitored, and assessed. I just want to know, why is that done? Because on the one hand, one can say, okay, you know, the DNA board is responsible to do its functions, but yes, a specific function in the Act, that's your business. I just want to know whether that was executed. Thank you, Judge.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, honorable members, for all those questions, which will bring clarity, I think, because they're follow-up questions. There's a question, clarity, about the budget going forward. Honorable, and then the Secretary will answer that. And I think important to answer in that regard is, in all fairness to the Secretariat, it is true that we had missed the first budget cycle. But what happened there is that an amount in about 1.2 million was extended to the board for our use. And it is that amount that we're talking about when we said we had only used about 340 or so thousand rand, and the rest of it was then taken away, and we couldn't do a number of things. And I think that fits in quite well with what the honorable member has asked about the DNA secretariat. Because it's such a critical position. How is it that we didn't in January already, you know, appoint the secretariat? Because without the secretariat, you cannot even begin to imagine how the board is going to operate. But it is also because of those budgetary issues. The fact that we missed the cycle, we got almost just a minimal amount from the secretariat's budget extended to us, and we had to operate on that. So we didn't have the budget for the appointment of the DNA Secretariat. We just didn't have the budget. And it is therefore in that context that I say, you know, in all fairness to the Secretariat, we didn't have a budget, and indeed they extended an amount to us. But then still, as Honorable Ramasakana says, what they had extended to us is what they took away again from us. And the Secretariat will then let us know how they will assist us with the budget going forward. The structure of the board...
Oh, Judge, sorry, Honorable Ramasakana is just going to follow up on that same issue, sorry.
Just quickly, a small question with respect. You did not have the budget, investor cycle, granted.
Yeah.
And then Secretariat improvised, allocated a budget, 1.2.
Yeah, from their fund.
Yes, allocated a budget. Now you had a budget of 1.2.
Yeah.
Did you have other 1.2 or you did not?
No, we did. We did, which they extended to us.
Yes, now
that's
a budget.
And that's what we're talking about, yeah.
For which that budget you were supposed now to do the bare minimum. So I don't think we can argue that you did not have a budget, because you did, at the end, have allocation of 1.2, which that 1.2, 950,000 was taken back to Secretariat to do other things.
Yeah. Yes.
Am I right?
Yes, you are quite right, Honorable.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the point I really wanted to make, because the Secretariat head did not quite explain this takeaway 950, because you can't be operating with a budget of 1.2 and then suddenly you only have 340,000. It's just not how you operate. It's just basically you can't do anything. That's why this words about the stepchild was smuggled in because of that. So I just wanted to make sure that let's agree you had a budget. It was not sufficient. It was allocated, but then it was subsequently taken away from you. So that's the thing where we need to settle the matter.
And I think there is no argument in that regard, Honorable. I think what I wanted to extend, fairness that I wanted to extend, was that it's true, we had missed the cycle. It's true. But the budget was extended to us, and it is that budget which was, in our view, not properly used, in the sense that as soon as we had about done work worth about 342,000. We couldn't move further because the rest was taken away from us. Thank you very much. And regarding ring fencing, indeed, Honorable Member Mbere, the Act doesn't specifically make provision for ring fencing. Although we are an independent board, we don't have direct access to Treasury. We operate through the Secretariat. But speaking for us, I think even where we don't have direct access to Treasury, it would be appreciated if we had a ring fence budget. And as you say, maybe that's a weakness of the Act itself. And the question then comes, Honorable Member, whether the budget cannot be treated as such, even if we don't formally ring fence it. Can it not be treated as such? And I think the Secretariat might be able to answer that, because we would really appreciate that. And then we know we have certainty in the budget. It is also not good to just spend as soon as we can without thinking through and working through issues, because we are afraid that the money might be taken from us. This is a serious board, it is serious work to do, and we must apply our minds with regards to our role and function. And It is important, therefore, that our budget is given the necessary respect, or we are given the necessary respect, you know, through our budget. And then,
Honourable Markey.
Do I understand the judge to be saying that it would be best to amend the act in order to have a ring-fenced budget within the act itself? Thank you.
Honourable Member, I do not know whether that is necessary to be done vis-a-vis the need for our budget to be respected once it has been allocated. Because for me, it's a state of mind of those who work with budget. But if for purposes of security, it is absolutely necessary, and the Act doesn't make provision for it, if there's no other way of circumventing our budget being spent in a way that it shouldn't, maybe, you know, like the judiciary used to operate, where their budget was ring-fenced because it was allocated to them by the Department of Justice. And when that was not sufficient to indicate its independence, it worked towards getting direct access to Treasury. But I don't know if we are there with regard to a board. But speaking for us, I would say we must try whatever we can to get a decent budget, and we need the assistance of the Secretariat to assist us to do that. To get a decent budget so that we are as effective as we possibly can, or as we possibly should, according to the Act. And do the work that the DNA Board is allocated to do by the Act as competently as possible, as effectively as possible. The Secretariat knows how budgetary issues operate in government. They will guide us. And I'm happy that Mr. Appiah says he's part of the board. He certainly would like the board to succeed. And we trust that he really wants to do that. We are colleagues. So I think we look to him to give us guidance on how to effectively, how to ensure that we get an effective budget. Let me just put it in plain words.
I would say once, return
twice. Twice shy.
On that point, Honourable Mark, I think it's also for the committee to consider that, I mean, we've got the power in March. If we are of the view that it's quite clear that we need now to really address the matter, we can must come with a proposal in terms of the Secretariat's budget specifically. So I think that's a matter we must consider next year, definitely, depending also on our recommendations. Because I think it's quite clear, judging from the input today and the responses, maybe we need to go to the House with a report and recommendations to strengthen the case for the board. So, you know, that we also emphasize the importance of it in the criminal justice system, and I think it's quite vital that we highlight. Judge, you're welcome to go ahead.
And thank you for that consideration, Chairman, because then that answers the question, what can this committee therefore do to assist the board, making it as effective as possible? And then, the questions of the logo. You know what, ideally one would like to see the board in a position that gives that makes it as independent as possible and gives the impression that it is independent. And once you have a logo which is coupled with any logo which reflects that we are part of SUPS, the confidence that people have in the oversight work that we do, exercising oversight over SUPS structures, well, I think be compromised, in my view. It may not be seen as an important aspect of our independence, but it certainly, in our view, points to the question of independence. So if we have our own logo, our own website, our own infrastructure, which does not associate us with the body that we exercise oversight over, I think we need that confidence from the public. And we hope that we can work towards it and eventually achieve it. We do understand, you know, if things cannot be done immediately. But I think our objectives are quite clear. We want to establish a board which serves the people of South Africa satisfactorily, as it should, and effectively. What are the budgets to be? Oh yeah, we've answered the ring fencing of the budget. What other question was there from Honorable Mbele? Did I answer all your questions? Or there are questions which the Secretariat? Oh. So that if there are questions that the Secretariat can answer and Brigadier Smith can answer, kindly do so, and the Honorable Members will indicate which questions still need to be answered.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Honourable Mbete's question relates to sharing of data or interfacing between different systems. I'm of the view that where systems are interfaced, it optimizes the workflow and it also limits possible mistakes and data integrity. It supports the data integrity and definitely optimizes the workflow, because you often find where systems are independent, same set of data is captured on the different systems. And if you capture it once, why not share between all the systems? If it is necessarily a challenge or an excuse, I think within SAPS that we do not have a problem. It's easy to share the data. Mm-hmm. It's between different governments. And then it's the question of the IJS, the readiness of the different systems to be able to do that. And that's maybe a question I think the IJS board should rather answer that. It would particularly be relevant to the sex register, which needs to be maintained by justice. Currently, it's my understanding, I could be wrong, that that data is not shared through the system to the CRIM system of SAPS. Also, the sharing of, in an instance, which may be relevant, if we capture the DNA number, the DV number of the sample that was taken, it's captured on the CAS or the ICDMS system. Now that gets captured again on a localized or provincial system, currently ANR, the arrest and release system, again. So you could optimize that. And I think that's just one of the challenges where we have discrepancy of what SAPS's report has been taken and what's actually being captured on the correctional services. If there was a link, then you would not have that issue. Also, I think part of the issue is we're all aware that correctional services have had some challenges with their system. They do not really have, I'm not sure until recently, had a system that was properly developed addressing their needs. This ANR is more like a spreadsheet type of thing, and it is not a national, it's provincial, which is also possibly contributing to the challenges that we may have. But that does not necessarily mean that with those challenges that you can work around it. It just makes it much more difficult.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I will also ask Mr. Roberts just to tell us in terms of how much does the board have in terms of the budget, because we, the Honorable Ramatsakane raised the question about when you say the circle was missed, what does it mean? The responsibility of the accounting officer is you go and you still make sure that you make the provisions. So we did
make sure that there is a budget that is allocated for the board. And Mr. Roberts will give you the details regarding that. This saying in Spedi where they say ke khomo ya moshat wa yahama umulato wa itluela umulato. As they're counting, I'm saying it in Chivenda, but yeah, something like that. Yeah. This is where, as an accounting officer, I find myself in. Facing over expenditure, which is unauthorized expenditure, and you have to come out with interventions. In the process, there will be casualties, obviously, and I do apologize that the DNA became that a casualty. When I came in, at some point we came here to the portfolio committee and we indicated that we might even go overspending to the tune of about 15 million. If those interventions were not taken, I will be going to SCOPA to explain why did I allow this to happen. We had to make that call. If there's no enabling legislation that says ring fence, it means that the accounting officer is responsible for all these funds. Their expenditure and making sure that, but I think going forward, we'll have to make sure that we consult more with the chairperson of the board, identify, because even now we've realized that there is huge under expenditure from the board itself, and we'll have to deal with that. So we will work more closely and make sure that when we make the decisions, it will be presented to the board, and we say, here is the challenge that we have. And I think the appointment of the secretary will actually assist a great deal in making sure that the board function appropriately. Mr. Roberts, if you can just indicate in terms of the budget that is available and also going forward.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to go back to the 15-16 budget. At no stage in the whole process, we indicated to the board that they could not meet or that there is not money available for them to fly in and out of Pretoria to attend their meetings. And even if we paid the members without approval from the ministers at that stage, they would have still only spent about R500,000 for the financial year, which would have left another R720,000, which the department could utilize for other. Now, and I need to stress that we didn't utilize this R900,000 before the end of the financial year. We waited until the last month of the financial year before we utilized it for possible overspending. In the current financial year for 16-17, there's a budget of just over 3 million available. I think on the calculations we did in terms of the strategic plan of the board, the budget should have been around 3.5 million rand. So that R500,000 less is mainly because of the budget restrictions that all the national government departments were given by National Treasury and Cabinet. So everybody, like the Secretary indicated, had to give their little bit to contribute to the cuts that's made to all the national departments. Currently, as it stands at halfway through November, the board has actually only spent R25,000 on their goods and services budget of almost R700,000. And even if we now pay all five members from outside The expenditure will only go up with about 150 to maybe 200,000 rand, if it's even that much, which still means that, by now, 7 months into the financial year, the board has only spent about 40, maybe 40% if we pay all those accounts.
The deputy chairperson of the board, do you want to, or the chairperson, have a response? I see you want to respond.
Okay, I think both of us are burning to answer the question, so let me give her an opportunity to do that. And there's still a question that Honorable Mulebasi. Why? I should remember you. The Honorable Member there? Ma'ake. Yeah, I'll also ask about how the board operates, whether we have localized structures. I think it is. Mabunda. Dr. Elf will answer that question for you. We almost missed it. Sorry about that. But let's respond to the budget.
I think it just must be clarified, very importantly, that the huge underspending has been our expectation that that amount would be allocated to the appointment of a secretariat, as opposed to it being utilized for other purposes, for which we haven't prioritized anything other than a number of very fundamental items, such as an office, a website, a secretariat, an assistant to the secretariat. So it would be contrary to what our intentions were for us to use that budget for any other purposes other than what we wanted for. So the huge underspend has been because our hands have been tied with regards to the inordinate amount of time it has taken to get to the point where the secretariat has been appointed. Because we are a statutory body, we have to comply with other departmental protocols such as HR and CSP, budgetary and treasury, etc., etc. Because we can't operate independently, if we had been given this money, we would have had a website, a secretariat, everything else that we probably would have needed. But because we can't do that, because we have to request all of this information from other departments, we cannot do what we want to do. So I just want you to contextualize that the underspending is not because we're sitting back and not spending the money, it's because we are anxiously waiting for the appointment of somebody who has sufficient expertise to be able to do the things that this board requires. And I just felt, and I think the judge felt the same way, that in that statement, it appears as if we are underspending. We are waiting.
And, to add to that, Honorable Chairperson members, part two of the report, the way forward, will indicate exactly that, which the Deputy Chairperson is talking about, which she is going to present through you, Mr. Chairperson, with questions.
Thank you. So, just to give a brief overview, the reason that we have included part two in the report is because in terms of our reporting requirements, we were only expected to report up to the end of March 2016. In so doing, it would reflect a number of statistics and a number of events that in fact have progressed quite significantly since that time. So it's important for you to have context in terms of some of the aspects, the progress that has been made. Obviously, when we come back next year and report in that financial year, just as the content officer started off this morning, you might want to look at this part two and ensure that coming back in our reporting period at the end of 2016-2017 year, that in fact these objectives have been addressed adequately. So really a number of these figures, we don't need to go through all of the detail today other than I will go through each aspect of it. But we would require you please to look at it in more detail going forward in order for you to have a baseline in terms of where we are now and where we hope to get to next year and on an ongoing basis. So the first part of the part two relates to the secretariat and the process. As I stated just now, it is out of our hands to a large extent because we have to follow the processes that are required by the CSP, HR, human resources. This is not a low-functioning job insofar as just being able to appoint a secretary to do administrative tasks. It requires somebody who has drafting abilities, who understands what statutes, what they mean, in order for them to inform us from as a board what needs to be done, to gather information, to assess reports, to look at information, you know, a lot of initiative is required. So that's probably why the job evaluation has been pitched quite highly and the budget that has been allocated to it is quite large because the person who is going to take on this responsibility does have an enormous responsibility going forward and possibly is a position that will transcend many boards if that person does stand to be, you know, the caliber of person we're expecting. So we are hoping by 28th of February 2017 that this person will be appointed, which means that we should hopefully be able to report the end of this issue at the next reporting period. But you will see there that there's an allocation of different dates as to the fact that we are fairly close to that particular process. And possibly we need to discuss with Treasury, and that would be something the judge would be doing, that the amount that has been allocated, if there is any left over, that it can be carried over for other purposes into the next year or utilized for other purposes. The accommodation and resources allocated to the board, we are still using the CSP offices, and as indicated, the logo on the website is we understand the logo and that can be resolved, but the website is an important and dedicated email address is very important. Currently, we are receiving a lot of communication via members' personal email addresses. I receive emails from people addressing issues. The Brigadier receives emails, the judge receives emails, some of the members receive emails, and it's not really an appropriate mechanism for the public to interact with us. We need a dedicated website. That's where everybody looks to. We need a platform whereby we can be easily accessed, and there are a lot of questions that are being raised on an ongoing basis, and we do feel that this is something that you can see is pending and does need to be addressed by the CSP urgently. We have requested that we do this independently, but because we are a statutory body and we fall under the CSP, we have been advised that we have to do it via their avenues, and they are, by the same token and with all due respect, also limited by CETA and other organizations that don't give them adequate you know, website space and all those other technicalities. But it is something that we do need desperately. We need a dedicated portal in order for people to access us and in order for us to communicate directly with them. The third part of this second section relates to the Convicted Offender Program. You will be aware that that the SAPS and the Department of Correctional Services had 2 years within which to obtain samples from the convicted offender population of Schedule 8 offences and to load those profiles onto the database. The first part of this report, the judge referred to 126 reference samples. Obviously, during that time, significant priority has been given to this issue. And again, it was largely due to the DCS and the SAPS needing to get together and formalize task teams to take on this task of not only sampling members of the convicted offender population, but also capturing it in a way that was compatible between the two systems. The good thing about this is that there is significant progress being made, and you can see now that there has been, in total, if you look at the following page, there is a simpler way of in terms of the table. There have been 54,158 samples that have been collected. The admission and release system, as you can see, in terms of the of SAPS and DCS, they're both working on different systems. So whilst a number have been collected, a number of samples have been collected, which SAPS knows because they get those stats directly from the police officers who are authorised to collect the systems, indicates one particular number, DCS haven't captured all of those sample taking on their systems. So you have these discrepancies between the two. The good news is that there has been, because we have a member of the DCS represented on our board, and unfortunately she's ill and was unable to be here today, but there has been a lot of communication that the board has facilitated between DCS and SAPS in order to ensure that these challenges are addressed and looked into. And I will commend both SAPS and DCS from the board's perspective in any event that you can see how the challenges have been enlisted under 3.4 of that particular paragraph, that there has been transparency and there has been an admission of responsibility in terms of certain of these issues from both sides. So it hasn't been a defensive approach. Both the DCS and the and SAPS have agreed and admitted to the areas where they have fallen short, and they are working together in order to ensure that this is prioritized. And you can see just from the numbers presented here how that is in fact being achieved. And it is also fair to say at this point that the board's responsibility in terms of all of the various interactions it has with the department is not to point fingers, but to look at the issues and try and work together with regards to some of the challenges that have been faced. This act is in its infancy, and there are obviously going to be problems that are going to be encountered. And it is hoped that going forward that this transparent and open approach which we have with the various departments as well as SAPS will continue, because it does ensure that there is transparency and a willingness to admit to where problems can be sorted out. So the if there are any questions with regards to those discrepancies, but I think it is quite clear if you read through it as to why the various numbers between DCS and SAPS don't marry up. There's also a huge drive towards awareness. The SAPS have distributed, you can see they're going to be distributing 300,000 information pamphlets to the convicted offenders. The offenders, the DCS have not reported cases of refusal, but more cases of prisoners wanting to know why their samples are being taken, what's going to be done with those profiles. We have had an opinion with respect to when a convicted offender does refuse, then there's a particular procedure in terms of regulations where they have to go to a medical officer, and there's a directive issued by the acting police commissioner as to what to do in that particular regard. So communication, not only between SAPS and DCS, has become critical in order to address these discrepancies, but most importantly, communication between SAPS and the convicted offender population has also become critical so that they understand what their rights are. And we are working towards a particular pamphlet that has been distributed, which gives all the information around the DNA Act, around why it's being taken, what's going to happen to those samples, the fact that the sample is destroyed and the profile is retained, the fact that it will remain if it's a convicted offender, and also only in respect of Schedule 8 offence. Other issues that have been faced with DCS is the availability of correctional facilities. So obviously when SAPS want to go to particular correctional facilities, they may not be in a position at that particular point to ensure that the convicted offenders are ready for sampling. You can understand you've got two massive departments trying to work together, and that's why these subcommittees and these nodal points have become so critical in trying to address that. And obviously the progress can improve, which is something that has been indicated. And now that they have prioritized this, hopefully by the time we report next, it will be addressed. The proposed action in 3.5 is that there will be additional communications resent between DCS and SAPS, almost going back to the drawing board to ensure that nothing has been missed in the process, to ensure that the coordinators communicate with each other on a bi-monthly basis so that the stats can be looked at on a bi-monthly basis and not every 3 months where you see these massive discrepancies, so they can pick up discrepancies at a much earlier stage and try and address them. And obviously, as indicated by Brigadier Smith, that the IGS board must also be impressed upon to prioritize the integration, because we have understood that when you're working with two different systems, is that you obviously, the interface becomes a bit of a challenge. The performance of the Forensic Science Laboratory is also reported in paragraph 4, and we have a subcommittee that deals directly with this. And essentially what we're trying to do is ensure that the database is populated on an ongoing basis with the correct category of person CNA profiles, that certain profiles are retained and others expunged within the parameters of the DNA Act, and that the buccal samples that are being received and the crime samples that are being received in fact correlate with the number of profiles that are being entered, and that the time frame within which all of those samples are delivered to the laboratory, are analyzed within the laboratory, and are loaded onto the profile and the samples destroyed are in fact adhered to. This obviously requires a lot of work, which is why a DNA secretariat and a research assistant would be so fundamental. Dr. Elias has done an incredible job of collating those stats together with the Brigadier Smith, analyzing them and putting them into a format that's understandable for yourself in terms of paragraph 4. More details in respect of this will be provided at the following report at the end of the year. But you can see that from the table, just under paragraph 4.2, and I'm sorry these pages aren't numbered, you can see that the grand total of profiles on the DNA database is currently sitting at 580,230,000 profiles. You can see that the reference indexes, which are known persons, arrestee, convicted offenders, missing persons, investigative and elimination, have increased, and that gives the National DNA Database Manager, who is conducting comparative searches, a much greater chance of finding a link, an investigative lead between crime scene unknown profiles and those that are known, which is essentially what the purpose of the National Forensic DNA Database is all about. And in saying this, you can look and see on 4.3, the investigative leads that have been identified through the National Forensic DNA Database, that they have identified 7,429 different cases from crime scene samples, which are unknown profiles collected from crime scenes, to known persons. So those are links that would otherwise never have been made, and we don't currently have a methodology like this to link those kind of cases to known persons. And even more importantly, you can see that there were 2,375 crime scenes that were linked, indicating that serial offenders are at play, and that the investigating officer, through this methodology, the National DNA Database Manager, informs the investigating officer that they are dealing with a serial offender in some cases, or that the same person of interest has been found at different crime scenes, indicating that there could be a link between those particular cases. And that is something that is incredibly significant, which wasn't being done in the past, and certainly can eradicate in the future the possibility of the high reoffending rate we have in this country, which literally can save future lives if you are able to apprehend someone at a much earlier stage of their criminal career path. So whilst the population of the database may be initially slow, I think that through paragraph 4, and when you analyze it and when you understand it and when you look at it, and again when we report in 6 months' time, we are certainly moving in the right direction. And when you get investigative leads and hits, so to speak, on the database indicating that it's working, that certainly shows that the Act is doing what it's intended to do. The next indication, number 5, we have dealt with the DNA database software solution. The subcommittees meet with the Forensic Science Laboratory, and we meet specifically with the National DNA Database Manager, and this is discussed at great length, that an appropriate software solution is currently working. They do have a software database solution that adequately, and you can see from the table on the previous page, adequately separates the different profiles into the appropriate indices, which they didn't have before. Previously, it was simply a reference index and a crime scene index. and there was no differentiation between the indices, which didn't allow them to expunge them at different bases that became very time conducive. This way, the categories of profiles are automatically put into the correct index, and from that they can be expunged or retained in the appropriate manner according to the Act. So that database software solution is currently working and operational, and through the reports that they are showing to us, and the database manager has actually indicated how it works, we are satisfied at this point that besides familial searching, it is in fact doing what it's supposed to do. It's generating investigative leads, it's generating comparative searches, it's generating retention and expungement policies within the DNA database. And certainly if the chairperson has recommended a site visit, I would recommend that probably it is to Pretoria, and that possibly Brigadier Smith can give them an opportunity to indicate or show how in fact that's working. Five and six go together in that familial searching policies was discussed, and until such time as an appropriate software solution in respect to familial searching policies has been developed, we can't in fact develop a policy, and it is very specific in terms of the database, and hopefully by the time we report in the end of March, the Forensic Science Services will be able to give us an indication of the progress in that respect. It is something that's on our agenda. It's something we talk about in our subcommittee meetings, and it certainly is something that the Forensic Science Services are addressing themselves. In terms of awareness, we have spoken about awareness, and you will see from the letter that we have issued a letter that we have sent to the National Commissioner. The awareness is critical at so many levels, not only awareness, as we've spoken about, amongst the public, amongst the convicted offender population around why the DNA database is in operation, how it's used, the different categories of profiles, but also around the activities of the board. That's very important for us to ensure that people understand that we are a transparent board. We have had emails saying, well, where are you? We don't know anything about you. And that's why a website and other mechanisms that allow people to see what we're doing and for them to read reports such as this is so important, that they are comfortable with the fact that we have ethical as well as oversight in terms of the implementation of the provisions of the Act. And obviously awareness in terms of, the Honourable Member mentioned, the FCS, as well as training, as well as the chain of custody on the crime scene. It's something that a lot of different departments are going to have to pull together in order to achieve, but certainly from a personal perspective in any event, from the time that one of the members mentioned this Act was, the bill was first brought before Parliament, the fact that the Act has been promulgated, the awareness around DNA evidence, around DNA profiling, around the management and the use of a DNA database, has actually increased exponentially, and we just need to make sure that that continues. And as an oversight board, it is something that we certainly have a subcommittee that looks at this, and I just hope that we have a platform, a social media or a website platform, in order to really ensure that more information around this can be disseminated. In terms of complaints received, we as I say, the people do somehow managed to get hold of this, and we always ensure that it's related to the board members. You can see in 8.1 that we've received a complaint from an accused person, and the complaint in that respect related to the delay in respect of their sample being analysed. The person complained that they were innocent, that they wanted to exclude their DNA profile, and it was taking too long. In the meantime, they were in remand, and they had a job, and they wanted to ensure that those 30 days were attended to because it was severely prejudicing that particular person. It was directed to a member of the CSP. It was addressed, it was dealt with, and that profile was analyzed. The sample was analyzed, the profile was generated, that person was indeed excluded. He was released, and it was expedited on that basis. So that was the one particular one. The other we have received is really an opinion in respect of the taking of buccal samples by medical nurses, medical doctors and registered nurses. There seems to be a misreading of the Act in that it seems to exclude the possibility of a medical doctor or registered nurse being able to take a buccal sample from certain categories of persons, convicted offenders and arrestees. And the board is going to submit a recommendation for this minor amendment because the intention of the portfolio committee who was originally tasked with the passing of this bill, it certainly wasn't intended that that was an exclusion, and it's just an interpretation of the act that needs to be addressed. So we're bringing it to your attention because it is something that we are going to be bringing for a minor amendment in order to ensure that the intention of the committee and the legislator is in fact carried through. So that's just something that we'd like to bring to your attention that will be brought forward. There have been other issues that have been addressed to the board, such as the one I've spoken to about what if a convicted offender refuses to have a sample taken, and a legal opinion has been sought in that particular instance, and the acting national commissioner sent out a circular in respect of the procedure to be taken in that place. But the good news is that we haven't received any complaints of abuse or misuse or any other ethical impedance in respect of the use of the act, the use of samples, or any other aspect relating to the management of the DNA database to date. 9 and 10 simply show you the meetings that we have. You can see that we are fairly active. We're also very active in terms of the email and our correspondence, bearing in mind that we are all in different provinces, we all have full-time jobs, and this is a part-time position. So despite that, there is a lot of groundwork besides that just meeting that occurs in between that time. So our mandate is quarterly that we meet, and we probably exceed that in terms of our subcommittee meeting and our meetings, and certainly in terms of our correspondence. And once we have a full-time secretariat, that person will also be able to pull together a lot of information for us. They'll be able to disseminate it, they'll be able to assess it and indicate, and we'll be able to give them instructions too in terms of what needs to be done. And then finally, the budget, you can see that it's been allocated, and I did mention earlier that please don't feel in any way that we're sitting back and not spending our budget. If anything, I think that actually shows that we're a considerate board, and it's a considerate approach because we have allocated it for that purpose, and we haven't reallocated it for anything else. And if it was up to us, we would have had all of these things in place a long time ago. In fact, the strategic consultant that put together our report in August 2015, there was a donation that was given to the board that they paid that person to come in because there was no budget for it. So it just shows that we actually use our initiative in order to try and get to the point that we want to get to. So we have to follow, because we're a statutory body, because we're a statutory beast, so to speak, and we are limited by the protocols of other departments. There's nothing further that we can do in terms of giving information. We gave all of the information in respect of what our requirements were, what the DNA secretariat had to do, a list of the functions, a list of the caliber of person, the research assistance, in terms of what we needed for our social media, for our website. All of those things have been given in great, great, great detail. And if there's anything else that is required from us, we do attend to it. So unless we're told what to do or given a specific mandate to fulfill, we do feel we provided the CSP in any event with every bit of information that we could possibly give as a board in order to fulfill it. So we hope that going forward, that these discussions around the functionality of the board will cease, and that we'll have all the functionality in place, and that we'll be able to get on with the job at hand, which we certainly have been doing in any event. So I hope that a number of those aspects of part two answer some of your questions, and obviously we're here to answer any particular questions in respect of part two, but just bear in mind that it is a progress report that will be finalized at the end of our following reporting period. Thank you very much.
Thanks for that. Members, final round. Yes.
Thanks, Chair. And thanks for the presentation. Unless, Chair, if my question or answer to my question
as missed in between the presentation and my understanding. Because I asked a question as to how does the board or this office interact with the local structures. But I didn't get the answer clearly. Maybe this time it will be relevant. Looking at whether it's item number 7 in this new or maybe second presentation, that deals with awareness. Chairperson, it looks like the secretariat position play a pivotal role, because everything that was supposed to be done and not done, secretariat looks like it is because of that position that is not doesn't have the warm body as of now. So this reminds me of one author called Stephen Covey to say, first things first. Maybe the secretariat would be the first position to be installed so that the office and everything would be able to function well. Now, with regard to awareness, how do awareness be conducted? I mean, if really we do not have structures on the ground. For instance, I'm coming from Limpopo in Mopani region. Can I go to one of those areas to access these services which we are talking about right now? That is why I wanted to know as to whether do we have some structures that are spread down to the masses, because remember there are no people at the national. All people comes from the structures on the ground and build up into a national office. So that is my follow up question, sir, Chairperson. Thanks.
No, I think that links to the question I asked in the previous round to the secretary, because in terms of Section 15T of the DNA Act, the secretary must ensure that there is programs to inform your community in Limpopo. So we must hear what is going on. That question was asked, so that's quite relevant. Honorable Molebatsi.
Yeah, let me start with the awareness one, because I also have some issues there. Where are these awareness conducted? Are they conducted amongst subs members? Are they conducted in prisons or in communities? Where are they conducted? My next question on my favorite one of familial searches is, I want to be more practical here. In some few days ago, there was some floods in Gauteng, and a toddler drowned. And this morning, they retrieved a body that looks like the toddler's body. Now, here we go. It calls for familial search. How is this going to happen? Thanks.
My name is Honorable Bailey and Honorable Ramatakani.
Thank you, Chair. I think firstly it's important to acknowledge the improvements in the buccal sample taking figures since the report we got in March. I mean, to go from 126 to 11,000 odd is a commendable surge. Although of course it does still look like they're behind schedule technically, if
if you would expect that more than a year, let me say halfway into the two-year time frame, they're not at about 50%, but you know, credit where credit is due for at least improving the rates. Hopefully they can continue to up that exponentially. And then also, I have to say, my heart literally leapt when I leapt with elation, should I say, that the figure of around 7,000 cases that have produced leads, because that's exactly what this whole setup is meant to be about, is improving the effectiveness of investigations, especially being able to hit more than one bird with one stone because of that repeat offender phenomenon. So hopefully that will continue along the same vein. The deputy chairperson did already start unpacking the issue of complaints, because that was going to be my main question. But you already outlined a couple of things. The one thing I did just want to verify is it sounded like she said there've been no complaints with respect to actual members, and therefore any cases that would have had to be referred to either the IPID or the National Commissioner, because I was going to ask about compliance with the 30-day initiation of proceedings, but that point is now moot. The other question I did have, let me just double check here. I think I then had a question. No, actually, I think I'm covered. Yeah, I'm covered. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Your Honourable Chair. Also, thank you very much for the presentation, the Deputy Chair there. Just, I've seen the exchange of letters and the Acting National Commissioner responded from your letter that you've written to him before. I just wanted to find out from reading the detailed letter from the Acting Commissioner, are you satisfied with that response? Secondly, I heard you say that, Madam, that the judge will start the process of engaging possibly to secure a rollover of unspent fund. So I attempted to ask the question whether you remember the use it or lose it. principle that nothing that is non-capital expenditure or committed capital expenditure would be rollover. That's a difficulty you're going to have with that. So you will have to consider that point going forward in terms of the budget. Then on the whole, if I can ask the board judge to, having listened to you presented the previous time, now you're presenting the number of issues. What would you ask us? What is it that you want the committee to assist you with, if I ask that question? Because you'll take long before you come again. So there may be something that you have and you have not been able to present it yet. Yeah, maybe you should present. Now, on your budget, the budget on the page, is item 11, I think. There's no pages, because it's the last page. I do see the planning there. That includes the things that you talked about, the issues about the website, this and the other. So the question I'm asking, you now have the budget. There is a budget. You are waiting. Are you going to be waiting a little bit more, or are you going to follow the budget as you suggested in terms of the money that you have? To make sure it's a bit problematic that you should be receiving individual emails on the personal emails. on the matters that are not personal. It's actually problematic to find a little bit of milder term. So I think as a matter of extreme quiet agent, there should be a normal platform to communicate, like any department will do, but you have the budget. What's stopping you from doing it? Or what's stopping you from persuading Secretariat to help you to achieve this? Even if you're not yet at, have not achieved an independent building for now, but for method of communications and how do you receive some of this is a bit odd that the way it's functioning. So I think we could safely say we would help where we need to help as a community to support this effort because we understand the value of the work that the board has to do in terms of this. And I'm happy that Honorable Bed also picked up this linkages of case 3,000 odd people linked to 7,000 three cases. It's a good thing. It's a good piece of work that must be done. And therefore, all efforts must be made to make it better, smoother, stress-free kind of work because you could well be stressed when you're still waiting and the Secretariat is not giving you the go-ahead. But I think in the main, there's a clear progress that one can see that is going to take place. Thank you for that work that you're doing.
Thank you. Members, is that all the questions and concerns? Thank you very much. That was the last round. We will now go for the final response round to the judge and the team as well as the secretary. Thank you.
But I think the first question, which is a rollover question, talking about rollover from the previous round, is that question regarding how the board operates, whether we have structures on the ground. We were going to allocate that question to Dr. Adels, who's going to indicate exactly and explain how the board operates, remembering that this is a national board. But having said that, honorable members, thank you, Mr. Chairperson. The question regarding the awareness. Remember that the secretary of the police has the role and function to create awareness, and we have to ensure that those awareness programs are indeed implemented. It is required that the subs therefore create programs, projects that create awareness not only among subs itself, but among convicted persons and the public. It is important, therefore, that those awareness within those communities are also linked with, the way I see it, are also linked with, or is also linked with the complaints and the number of complaints that come. Because I don't think we can be satisfied that we do not receive complaints per se. The question is whether people are aware of what needs to be done. If we don't receive complaints, I think it's well and good. It may mean that the ethical questions, the competence questions are being well catered for. But it may also mean that people don't know. They don't know better, so they don't know what to complain about. So it is important for us to ensure that those awareness programs are indeed designed and indeed implemented. And once, as the deputy chairperson says, once we set up our website, we will have direct communication. Once it is fully operational, we will have direct communication with the public, for example. We will have direct communication with offenders, for example, or convicted persons. And then those questions will probably begin to come in. So it is important for us, therefore, to ensure that those awareness programs are, in fact, created and implemented. And where are they conducted? Brigadier Smith will probably give us a good outline on how they do it, where exactly it happens operationally. And so too the familial searches, you're quite right, Honorable Mulebatsi, that this is a very practical example, the toddler who drowned in those floods, whether the body that they have found yesterday is indeed. We know, but we cannot make assumptions. So it is important that we know exactly how the familial searches will be conducted. And I think the deputy chairperson will answer that. The deputy chairperson will also answer perhaps further the compliance questions with regards to complaints and awareness. And, well, I think the stats that elated Mr. Mbele was just a comment. Yes, thank you. And the responses to the correspondence by the National Commissioner and whether we are satisfied with that response and also the rollover to negotiate or not to expedite the rollover of the budget and what assistance we can expect from or we would like the committee to provide for us. Let me address the budget rollover. That is an important question that faces us. But if we look in the context of the fact that once we have a secretariat, a lot of the work that we are expected to do will be done. The work which will absorb most of our budget. If we look at the time frames that are given with regards to the appointment of the DNA secretariat. We hope that before the end of the financial year, we would have appointed the DNA secretariat, and a lot of the work that needs to be done, which have already been budgeted for, because we have prioritized. Once the DNA secretariat comes on board, there are a number of things that need to be done. And $3 million is not a lot of money, as far as we are concerned. We have prioritized that money will be spent. But in case there's a need for rollover, you're quite right. We might have to determine whether and how and when we should negotiate. And the secretariat will tell us whether, will give us guidance, I think. But knowing how Treasury operates, I think we are on a slippery slope. But we will try, I think we will try, or I hope we will try to act as fast as we can in order to operationalize the
the board sufficiently so that we spend the money. And what the committee might want to do is to raise awareness that we might have to come. We might have to negotiate. We might have to be considered for negotiation and roll over. I don't know to what extent the committee can do it. Between the committee and the secretariat and us, we might have to work together to ensure that we retain that part of the budget so that we can really operationalize the board. It is very important. And matters are beyond our control, I suppose. As the deputy chairperson said, we have also to comply with the protocols of the departments with whom we work. And those protocols have also been prohibiting factors from our perspective. Any other questions, I think the deputy chairperson will answer. Dr. Errols will answer, and Brigadier Smith will answer, and the secretariat might also, especially the budget issues. Rollover budget, and how we can work together to ensure that we retain some of the money that, in fact, all of the money that has been allocated to us within the specified time, or over the specified time, if I may say that.
Honourable Member, in respect to the question on familial searching, this particular toddler, and Brigadier Smith, can, I'm sure, will be able to assist me too, is that you're still able to work on a case-by-case basis to identify missing persons and unidentified human remains. They use the same algorithms as they would with disaster victim identification. Doing familial searching is just a, going forward, a more advanced methodology for identifying persons who may be have been reported missing. So in this case, the toddler would probably have been reported missing by the parents, in which case they would then utilize either the parents' DNA to identify to the child or use other methodologies such as dentist reports or other forms of identification. But going forward, the way in which it is hoped that it would be able to solve cases is where you find unidentified remains. And you could have a case of a missing person reported, let's say, 5 years ago or 10 years ago, as the case may be, where the parents or a family member will submit a DNA sample from that particular person if they're fortunate enough to have a hair sample from a hairbrush or a toothbrush. That profile is then entered onto the database. Alternatively, the parents or family members will put their DNA profiles onto the database, and then if there's unidentified human remains, that will automatically be searched against that index as well as a crime scene index. And if there is a link, at least gives the investigating officer a potential lead to who that unidentified human remains possibly is. But currently, it's done on a case-by-case basis. So by not having the familial searching algorithms in place, it doesn't prevent the forensic science services from utilizing their current facilities to be able to try and match a person. But the most important thing with familial searching going forward is that the policies are in place to ensure that there aren't fictitious searches being done by too many hits coming on the database, linking it to people who aren't necessarily part of the investigation, as well as issues of family relations that may be private. And that's why it has to be dealt with in a particularly an ethical way, which is why a policy needs to be in place. But in terms of a case-by-case basis, when they receive, for instance, a body and they're trying to link it to a particular person, they will use whatever methodologies they have available to them. And I don't know if Brigadier Smith wants to answer date on that. Lisa Day.
Honourable Rabat, I think it was well answered, well covered. As case-by-case, we'll be able to do the identification between the toddler and the parents.
Thank you. Other responses?
Honourable Chair, I would like to apologize your initial question regarding the guidelines for awareness. Was it done? I think I must admit on this one we have overlooked it. It's an issue that we will need to actually focus on it, make sure that it's done before the end of the financial year. So those guidelines, I think we can, maybe with the next DNA report, we will present that to the committee. On the issue of the budget rollovers, there are rules in terms of rollovers. You can't roll over compensation, for instance. There's percentages also which need to be adhered to. There's maximums that you can do that. But I think what we'll do is we will make a presentation to the board in terms of how that work. I don't think it's an issue that should come in. As I indicated, that we will from now on have to make sure that whenever we are making decisions, which we didn't do good in the past, decisions regarding the budget that have been allocated, there will be engagement with the chairperson of the board and give details and the reasoning why we are doing these things. Because as it stands now, if we have an under expenditure, it's the accounting officer that must be responsible to say why did you allow under expenditure to happen. But the board will be taken into confidence before we do anything about the budget that we have allocated. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
One of the questions was instruction, where do we get the information from? We've created these subcommittees, and what's currently happening, the subcommittees have, luckily we have a nodal point at the FSL, where we have our meetings and we get our data directly from them, from the people doing the groundwork and compile a committee. But once we have a DNA secretariat, that person will be responsible of getting all that information from the various entities. If that answers your question, so I hope. Thank you.
In other words, this is a national board. We don't have, say, provincial structure. It's just a national board. We access our information from the police structures, whatever information we need, because we exercise oversight over the management of DNA by all the structures which engage DNA. DNA issues. So we don't have, it's a national body, we don't have structures on the ground. We liaise and communicate with the national structures of the subs regarding information that we need for our oversight role and function.
Judge, if I can add to that, that's not to say that we wouldn't really love to have provincial representation at ground level in order to gather the information that reports back to the board, because currently, as you can see, we're doing all of that ourselves.
Yeah.
So ideally, and that came out in the strat plan, it would be fantastic to be able to ultimately have provincial structures at ground level that go in and ensure that it's at grassroots level, awareness is taking place, that information is gathered, that's fed into the secretariat analyzes it into systems reports back to the board, and the board then discusses how it's going to manage it in an ideal world. But currently that's all been done by the board, but obviously going forward it could be something that that could take place in the future.
Something that we might have to come back to later, once we figure out how it will operate, if we require that ideal situation, we might have to come back at some stage to propose some amendments to the Act. Because the Act is actually a work in progress as far as we are concerned. It will be informed by the operation of this new board. Remember, it's a new board, and I do not think the legislation answers all the questions. Our operations will probably identify the gaps, and we might have first to try and interpret the Act in such a way that it gives us the answers that we're looking for. But if we find that the Act itself needs to be amended, the Act itself gives us an opportunity to propose amendments, and we will probably come back to this committee with proposals for amendments.
Thank you. I want to close. Unfortunately, we will be on time. But thank you very much. Thank you very much, Judge and your team, as well as the Secretary and the Honourable Members, for this interaction. I think we note the annual report and also the interim report. I think it's quite clear from the comments of the members and the evaluation there's indeed progress. I think we're looking forward to the appointment of the Secretariat, because that will, I think, address a lot of the challenges. I think we again call for closer cooperation between the Secretariat and the Board to ensure that we move in terms of the logistical and other budgetary matters. I mean, more communication is quite vital. I think it's also vital that the Board must meet with the Executive Authority. I think it's just in terms of good governance important that the Minister is kept abreast if there's issues, that he's aware of that. I think there also needs to be an interaction between SAPS, the Acting National Commissioner, and the Portfolio Committee on the Board, or on the role of the DNA environment, judging from the letters. And then I think it's going to be important that also that we make some recommendation to the House in terms of the interaction today, a formal report, to raise our concerns and maybe suggestions how the matter can be taken forward. Yeah, I think we recognise also the important work that's been done by the DNA Board, and I think it's a vital institution, and we thank the members also for their role. Thank you, members. We will then meet again next Wednesday at 9 o'clock. Just to remind you that we received the adjustments, comments from the police and IFED. It was circulated. We also received the discussion documents for the conference advisor. Thank you very much. So if we need to react to that, we can deal with that next Wednesday. But we already, I think, received the responses. So thank you very much. This meeting is adjourned. Thank you.